Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Testing, testing, hot out, bound car, 1, 2, 3, 4, testing.
Hey, boy, you know, Ralph, I'm getting a little nervous out here. I don't know how you can keep so calm back there.
Get ready. 10 seconds. 5 seconds. Go.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. Yo, turn to that station.
Your one definition of a friend is someone who's there when you need him. Well, I needed him and he's here. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Elton
Jim.
Good morning, Elton Jim.
Elton Jim.
The one, the only, Elton Jim Toronto.
I'm back. When they needed a friend, they knew who to call. They needed me, and so I'm here. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Be here till 5 a.m. So all you insomniacs, you vampires, if you're up for the 1 o'clock feeding, whatever reason it is that you are awake, or maybe you just like to listen to the radio, and that's the person that I love most. We got a lot planned for you. We're always going to stuff as much as we can into this show. I always like to say we try to stuff at least 4 pounds of bologna into a 1-pound bag, and we've certainly got enough of radio bologna here to fill more than a 1-pound bag. Looking at my little schedule here today, I must say, as I often do, now I'm working with Tom Hush tonight, producer for Nick, and Tom and I have worked together in the past. So nice to have you here, Tom. Have I ever worked with you where I have used my cashmere woods at all?
You definitely have.
Oh, okay, yes. Good. All right, so there you go. So now the show is officially christened. As you know, I love my Glade cashmere woods air freshener spray. It is my scent. I have to say, I'm a little disappointed. My new bottle my last bottle of cologne is running out, and they've stopped making it, and I need a new scent for 2020. Do you wear cologne, Tom?
On special occasions.
Special occasions. Yeah. Like what's is a special occasion getting out of bed, or, I mean, what do you consider?
More like going out to dinner.
Is Tuesday a special occasion, or no? No? In other words, you don't wear it every day.
I do not, no. I'll throw in a little Drakkar Noir for Thanksgiving.
Oh, there you
That's
go.
About it. That's about it.
Well, hopefully, thank God I won't be seeing you for Thanksgiving then. I don't know what you're going to be smelling like, but I am on the hunt for a new scent. So if there's any gentlemen out there who do wear cologne and you like the brand that you wear, I'd love to hear it. And if there are any women, especially out there, who like a certain cologne, that those pheromones floating around there, give us a call here. Would you want to talk about anything throughout the morning here, by all means, 312-981-7200. But what we do have planned to talk about today, so 2020, the coming of a new year, always ushers in several new laws that go into effect literally at 12:01 on New Year's Day. The most high-profile and most popular law that is right now on the books that will be going into effect is the legalization of marijuana for recreational use here in Illinois. And so there's been a lot of hubbub about this over the last several months when the law was finally signed. A lot of companies are jockeying for position in terms of the dispensaries and, you know, who is going to become the supplier or the dispensary in the Chicago or Illinois area. There's a lot of suburbs that are saying no to dispensaries and marijuana sales in their towns, even though it is legal in the state. A lot of towns, suburbs, are voting no. We don't want that in our city. So that's interesting, too. So there's a lot of different issues. The health issue is also going to play as time goes on and we start to see perhaps some more illnesses going on. We certainly have heard about the vaping illnesses. So there's a lot of different issues that are sprinkling around the legalization of marijuana in Illinois, and certainly we're not the first state to do that. Several states have already legalized it, but hey, it's new to us, right? But as I was thinking about it, I came upon one side issue that I believe the legalization of marijuana is going to slowly and subtly change our lives. Maybe not right away, maybe in 5 years, maybe in 10 years, but it's maybe something you've never thought about. And so we're going to talk about that as we kick off the show here. But yeah, you know, this whole marijuana thing is going to be a very interesting part of our lives, because I've been to Amsterdam a couple of times, just there this past summer. And what you will notice definitely is you will smell marijuana on the streets. When you're walking down the street, you will suddenly smell it, and it will become very common to you. At first you'll go, "Wow, what's that?" And then you'll realize what it is. And believe me, as time goes on, you will smell it, especially if you go to very populated areas where there's a lot of people, like for instance, you go to the Kris Kringle Market, one of those kind of events where there's a lot of people mingling around. You'll smell marijuana. And what you also will begin to smell marijuana is you'll begin to smell it on people, on their coats, we forgot. Because smoking is not allowed in restaurants anymore, we forgot how much our coats and clothes used to smell when we would go to bars and restaurants, because they would smell like cigarettes. And that's been gone now for a few years, and we've forgotten about that. But even though you can't smoke marijuana in a restaurant, for some reason it seems like marijuana smell adheres to clothes a lot more than cigarette smoke. Because when I was walking around Amsterdam, I would bump into somebody and go, "Oh, wow." It's almost like that person must have just smoked 5 seconds ago. And it wasn't just one stray person. It was a lot of people. And I'd be sitting in a restaurant and someone would be walking behind me. And I would always get a whiff of someone going by. So you are going to be affected by the legalization for the recreational use of marijuana starting in January, on January 1st. Even if you don't partake, even if you never use it, even if you never walk into a dispensary, I guarantee you, you will realize that that marijuana is legal in Illinois, and for recreational use, so more people using it than just for medicinal uses. And I also am going to wonder, as we move forward, how will they gauge this in terms of impaired driving? Is there a test for marijuana? I mean, is it? Do you ask somebody the capital of Utah? I mean, how do you do that? We have a drunk person try to walk a line.
You just kind of shake a bag of Doritos in front of them, and if they go for it, take them to the pokey.
Yeah, the policeman all of a sudden, they'll come out of their car and they'll pull out two stacks of Pringles. Would you like onion or Parmesan? And if you grab for one of the cans of Pringles, they think they may get you. So there's a lot of issues, but there's one that I haven't heard of. I think that I have caught on to something here, very unique, but I think it's going to be a reality. So we'll talk about that in a little while. We'll also talk about, as I said with Carl and Lisa, we'll actually talk to Tom, who is a millennial. I do this feature every so often called the Millennial Meter, which I try to see if I'm still cool by talking to a millennial. But this time, what's going to be interesting is I want to get Tom's take on this, as well as I'm going to talk to a friend of mine who is a baby boomer, because the millennials are finally starting to fight back. It's been a good 5, 6, 7 years where they've been taking a lot of heat for their behaviors, what they like, what they dislike, how they do things in the media. Mostly it's older people. And there's a new catchphrase that finally, instead of "we're mad as hell, we're not going to take it anymore," the boomers have come up with their own. And I'll tell you, it's only like two words, but wow, it's effective. It's effective. So we'll talk about that and a whole lot more. I'll keep telling you as the night goes on. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGiulio here at WGN 720. We'll take a quick break. We're back after this. Hey, guys, no switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGiulio this morning. And I was saying how my favorite cologne is almost at the end. It's fitting that it's almost right at the end as the year comes to an end. So it looks like in 2020, a Jim Tirano will be looking for a new scent. And I was just kind of throwing this out to people, men who may have their favorite cologne and women who may like to smell their man with a specific scent. And so it's nice to have Beth on the phone. How you doing, Beth?
Hi, Beth. Good to meet you, Jim.
Hey, very good to meet you. So, first of all, A, do you like
a man? Tell me the name of your Glade fragrance again, because I used to find that stuff.
Yeah, it's gone. My favorite fragrance, and I hoarded this fragrance because I heard it was going out of business. And in fact, then when it was gone, I looked up online and I got a company that would. Have you ever heard of these companies that will match your cologne scent?
Yes.
And so I'll tell you. So my favorite cologne for about 15, 20 years was a cologne called Montage, and it was by Graham Webb.
Did it have the little accent thing over the E?
Yeah, I think so. Montage.
I'm talking about Glade. What was your room
fresh? Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, my Glade. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm totally into scents today. I have no sense, S-E-N-C-E, but I'm tuned with a lot of sense, S-C-N-T-S. Yeah, no, my Glade air freshener scent is Cashmere Woods.
Cashmere Woods. Let me tell you what the secret ingredient is. Sandalwood.
Sandalwood. Is that what it is?
Yeah. So if you're going to mix your own fragrance, a little sandalwood, and what I told little Tommy was... lemongrass during the day.
Hey, little Tommy. Boy, Google that reference.
No.
But so what? And what exactly is sandalwood?
It's kind of like that Glade.
Oh, okay.
Cashmere wood.
Cashmere woods. All I know is I've been talking about cashmere woods for about 4 years. And
all right, so tell me what Montage smelled like.
Yeah, Montage.
Because Tom with his dry cow noir. Yeah. I don't know what bootlocker he found that in.
What I liked about Montage was that it was not overly musky smell. It actually had... Kind of a soft and almost a little sweet smell. It was very distinct. It was very unique, and I always would get compliments on it, like, wow, what's that cologne you're wearing? I wouldn't douse myself with it. You know, just a couple little specks behind the ears and maybe on the wrist. But I just really, really loved this.
Well, you know, the key is to put it, first of all, on your pulse points.
You have what?
You put your cologne on your pulse point.
Yeah, right. I'm on my wrists and behind my ear. Yeah.
Right, right. But now I come from when I was in high school, what was it called? There was a fragrance that they would sell to girls that would smell different in the morning than it did in the evening. Like,
oh, really?
It would transpire. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
There was another one that smelled different on different girls.
Huh. Well, that makes sense, because I mean, I think everybody does have...
Is it Windsong? Windsong stays on your mind?
Yeah, I can't seem to forget you. Your Windsong stays on my Windsong. Oh, I remember that song. I used to like that song.
It did stay on their mind.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Well, I was very disappointed, because my when I sent away to this matching company, the scent that they sent me back was not bad, and I wore it. But at the same time, it was still not my Montage. And so I've gone online, and it's like, this stuff is liquid gold. If you go on eBay, people still have some, but they're literally charging $100 to $200 a bottle.
Forget about it. Let me tell you what to do.
Yeah. So what should I do?
I grew up and I just wear jasmine.
Oh, all right.
So there's a little place that you can go to in Bristol, Wisconsin during the summer on weekends.
Okay.
And you can mix your own perfume.
Oh, that sounds cool. Maybe I'll try that.
Yeah, no, there's a booth. Just wait till the summer.
Yeah, well, I can't wait till the
whatever
summer.
They give you for Christmas, you're going to have to wear that until Father's Day anyway.
Exactly right.
So okay? But go to the Bristol Renaissance Fair.
Oh,
and there's
right.
a little girl in a booth, and she'll give you 100 things to smell, and you can make your own.
All right. Well, that sounds...
That's what I did. And by the way, my daughter works next door building corsets. So have a nice summer.
Very nice. Well, have a good Thanksgiving. And, and I could smell you from here, Beth. Thanks a lot. There's Beth on the line here. We also have a taxi driver, Bob. Is this the taxi driver, Bob?
Yeah, that's the one and only.
Hopefully my gosh.
It's the one and only.
Taxi.
If there's another one of me, we're in real trouble,
taxi
dude.
Taxi driver Bob used to call to the afternoon show several years ago. Wow, it's nice to hear your voice, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. How about yourself, sir?
Well, surviving. Well, you know, still, I guess I don't know what to tell you. I'm on at 1:25 a.m., so you tell me how I'm doing.
Well... Hey, well, I'm glad to hear you.
I appreciate it.
Nice to always hear your voice.
Oh, and I appreciate that. And I certainly appreciate your loyalty. It's great to hear you again. So, what do you have a scent for me?
Yes, I. You know, I can't afford these expensive colognes and stuff on a regular. I usually wear cologne, you know, all the time, but I can't afford to expend, you know, $50 for 2 ounces of cologne.
Right.
I normally get this stuff, and I had gotten it a long time ago, and I found a consistent place to get it, which, you know, is Amazon. It's $15 for 4.2 ounces.
Okay, that's not
and
bad.
And it's called Pinot Silvestri.
Pinot Silvestri. It sounds very wine-like.
Right.
I like...
I'll tell you what the aromatic features are.
Yeah, what are they?
And I don't know, the first one is bergamot, lavender, basil, lemon, juniper berries, carnation, nutmeg, geranium, thyme, fir tree, amber, cedar, musk, and another one I don't know, tonka beans and moss. But it smells... It smells like a pine tree-ish.
Oh, that's cool.
So, yeah, it's actually like if any of the scents that are out there, that would be like a scent that you'd want to wear during the Christmas season.
Yeah, and this way people can hang ornaments on you too, which is
nice. That's right. They do on my nose and arms and stuff. It's really weird driving around the cab like that, but hey, whatever.
I like most of the 1,700 ingredients that you just listed there. I like about 1,200 of them. So I think I will try that.
It's $15 a bottle for 4.2 ounces.
Not
so
bad. Pinot Silvestri.
Right. You'd see it on Amazon. Do you want me to send you a link on the text line or is it down?
No, we have it. We have it. Yeah, we have the text line up there, but I can find it. I'll find it. Pinot Silvestri. Sounds good.
All right. So anything special you're doing for Thanksgiving or Christmas?
No, just hanging around. I just found out that the next day on Black Friday, I'll be back right here from 1 to 5. So I'm going to have to cut my Thanksgiving meal short and
if you're going to go this route with the cologne business, you got to figure out what Elton John wears. You know, maybe
I don't think I could afford his stuff there, Bobby. I got to run here and take a break.
I don't think so either, dude. But who knows what he wears?
Okay, well, it's great to hear from you. I really appreciate the call and call back next week.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. If I don't hear from you,
all right. Really great to hear from taxi driver Bob, an old and loyal listener. Very nice. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio. We'll take a quick break. Be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN 720 AM. Filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Be here till 5 a.m. Then we pass things over to the opening bell. I think Paul Lesnick is going to be filling in this morning. But we certainly have lots of time between then for you and me to speak. So hopefully you will be hanging around until 5 a.m. And I'm wide awake. So what the heck are you doing? And a lot of people, I think, might be even taking this week off. It's a short week with Thanksgiving on Thursday, so maybe you don't even have to go to work tomorrow. So there's no need to get to bed. You could sleep all day. It's more fun taking a nap during the day anyway. It feels like you're doing something naughty, you know, when you take a nap during the day when it's still light out. I mean, everybody's sleeping at night. Anybody can do that. That's been done. Do something different. If you can, take a nap during the day. It's just naughty. It's a little devilish. whatever the reason you're up, as I said before, whether you're doing the 1:30 feeding, you have insomnia, you're coming back from the third shift, you're going on for the third shift, whatever shift you're on, for whatever reason, I appreciate you sticking up, staying up with us this morning, and we will certainly try to make it worth your while. I was talking a little while ago about my cologne is down to, almost a few little sprigs left. I'm going to have to really conservative. I'm going to make it through to January 1st, but I'm looking now. I'm on the hunt for a new scent, and just looking at so I've had a couple of people call in here with a few recommendations. Pinot Silvestre by Taxi Driver Bob. I have to look that one up on Amazon. Somebody says Aramis. I believe I've used Aramis at one time. I thought it was pretty good. I liked it. I like this text from 815. You seem like a high karate guy. Now there's a blast from the past. If you never heard of high karate, Google that. They had some of the best commercials of all time. It was a cologne in the 60s and early 70s. I was a little kid. I didn't even use cologne at that time in the 70s when high karate was on. But basically, the whole idea of the commercial was that if you put on high karate, you are going to have to fight off the women. I mean, they are going to get a sniff of you, and you are going to have to literally use karate to fight off the women. And that was what the commercials were. But I do like to wear a cologne. I don't know. A lot of guys are iffy on colognes. And yes, you know, when Father's Day comes and now with the holidays coming, you know, dad is always difficult to buy for. And it's the tie, and or it's a nice bottle of liquor. If you go to some of the liquor stores or even department stores or convenience stores, you'll see now around this time of the year they will have the prepackaged, entire cologne pack that has a cologne and a soap and things like that. That's all packaged together with several items in one package. Or you'll even see now a lot of, as I said, liquors had come with. I saw one of my favorites on the holidays is Maker's Mark. I that's my Christmas Eve tradition. I have little Maker's Mark. I cut it with a little Coke, just a little to give it a touch. Although I think. Last year I tried the Jack Daniel's honey. Have you tried that? Oh my gosh, does that go down smooth? Whew, that's dangerous stuff. I think I might go back to Maker's Mark this year, but I was in a Walgreens store and I saw the holiday package of Maker's Mark, the bottle with a Maker's Mark glass. I am a sucker for any kind of logo on a company logo on any kind of product. So I was looking at that saying, that might look cool. But I'm looking for a scent here. Why don't we go to Carrie and bring Carrie up because Carrie might have a scent recommendation for me. Hey, it's Jim Toronto. It's WGN. Hi, Carrie. How you doing?
Hey, Jim. Doing great. Miss Nick, but great to hear you as always.
Well, I appreciate that. So are you, first of all, are you a cologne guy?
You know, it's really funny, as I told Tom, I haven't worn cologne in probably 20 years, but my wife and I are going on a...
And your friends know it.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, they smell me. Well, I'm not in France, though. I don't cover, you know, what...
Yeah, right. Yeah,
exactly. We go 9 ways, son of us.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're, my wife and I, spur of the moment, decided to go on a cruise over Christmas.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, just spur a moment. It's like, let's go and get a good deal. But I remember that we went on our honeymoon cruise 30 years ago, and I was wearing cologne, and it was Dracar.
Oh, okay.
And my wife liked that. I like Pierre Cardin.
Oh,
my wife
right.
Didn't.
I remember Pierre Cardin was always a popular brand. Yeah.
So I was thinking, because really seriously, I haven't worn it in like 20 years, and I was thinking about, is that still in vogue? Should I buy some cologne?
Well, I'll tell you, I think it is. Because, you know, when you go to a big department store like a Macy's or something like that, and you go to the men's department, it's all out there. So, I mean, now people are buying it, you know, for gifts. I don't know if everybody's using it as much. They might say thanks a lot and put it on the shelf like my dad used to do a lot. But I'm always been a cologne guy. Like I said, I don't douse myself. I don't think you want.
Sure.
I don't think you want your cologne getting to the door, you know, 10 minutes before you do.
Sure.
But at the same time, I think it's, you know, especially, I don't know about you. I've kind of are somebody that perspires, and so I certainly want to make sure that when I'm approaching somebody, I'm not off.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
You know,
yeah, but the funnier, as I told Tom, the funnier story is when I was in high school, I was probably a senior, and you know, I got a gift probably from an uncle. Oh, here's some cologne for you.
He regifted. And,
yeah, well, we regifted, and I think it was actually Pierre Cardin. It's probably my wife doesn't like it, but I had an idea. Again, senior in high school.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a stinky pair of Puma, you know, gym shoes.
Yeah.
And I decided that it might be a good idea to pour some cologne in them because that would take care of the smell.
Oh, geez.
Guess what? That don't work.
No, that I'm betting that
in
would,
fact, it made it twice as bad.
Yeah, I'm no chemist, but I have to believe that when you
actually pour, I am a chemist. Actually,
oh,
it's funny you mentioned that. I am a chemist.
You should have known that you were creating.
I wasn't that. I was in high school.
Oh, okay, no, but you may have thought you that should have been your first clue. Maybe that made you become a chemist when you put together your horrible foot odor and Pierre Cardin
and
said,
cologne and a pair of they were. White with black striped Pumas.
Those sound awesome.
Back
man.
In the day,
those sound.
You know,
mint.
This is 1980. Five, six.
Oh, sure.
You know.
Pumas used to be big back then. That sounds.
They're big now again, but they went away for a while. But yeah, no, that was when Pumas are really big. So I'm like, I don't want to. I can't get rid of these shoes.
These are
the shoes.
You're lucky the shoes didn't explode. With that chemical, with that chemical reaction that you.
I might have absorbed something through my feet that maybe that's why I really enjoy listening to you or something.
There you go. So you would say either a Pierre Cardin or a Dracar, right?
I like Pierre Cardin. My wife likes Dracar.
Okay, well, I'll
and happy wife, as Lou Manfredini says,
yeah,
happy wife, happy life. So,
well,
so
that's good. Well,
if I do, but should I bring it on?
Yes,
I
think
for the
you
cruise?
Should.
That's the question.
Well, first of all, where are you going?
We're leaving from Miami. It's just Caribbean, so
yeah,
we're going
okay,
to Jamaica and Cozumel, and you know,
okay.
The usual little trip.
Well, if you're going, once again, as I say, now you sounds like you're going to a warm area. So you know those pores will be opening with the heat. So you might become your own Puma shoe. So I think you may need at least a few little dabs.
Okay.
So bring some with you.
All right. I'll go to Macy's and check it out.
Okay, Gary. Take
thanks,
care.
Jim.
Thanks a lot. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. I think cologne is something, as I said, as long as you don't take a bath in it and it becomes irritating, then I think it is just something nice to have in your overall presentation, if you will. And so, yeah, like I said, this montage, it drove me crazy because I loved it. And it used to always be at Ulta, and it wasn't bad. It was like $25, you know, for a bottle. And I even used to get some of the travel bottles sometime. And I just liked it because it was very unique. It wasn't that most men's cologne have that deep, musky smell. And this was just different enough. And it was still manly. It wasn't like a female's perfume. But at the same time, it wasn't that real hard kind of, you know, musky smell, which I really don't like. So that's why it won't be easy for me to find a new scent for 2020. But I do appreciate these recommendations. So I'm going to should we take a break or can we take a break now and then we'll come back and talk? Yeah, why don't we take a quick break here and then I'm going to come back on the other side of those and talk a little bit about the legalization of marijuana and what I believe is going to be a byproduct of the legalization for recreational use here in Illinois in January, starting, 6 weeks away, if not less. But a byproduct, which I haven't heard anybody mention yet. So That's my job, to bring that kind of stuff to you on a regular basis. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio. We'll be back after this. Break, no switching. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Be here till 5 a.m. Just to wrap up a little of the perfume, not perfume, cologne talk. I have to make sure I don't. I'm not looking for a perfume, folks. I'm not transitioning just yet. But yeah, if you're just looking at the text here, some people mentioned some of the good old standbys like Polo and Nordstrom's Hermes and Stetson. I remember getting Stetson back when I was in high school and college. And then I like this one from 224. It says Sex Panther perfume. It works every time. We'll see about that. And also a woman wrote in and said she does not like men wearing cologne. And I think that's something, too, that while, you know, a lot of guys might be looking for a cologne, there are some women that that just rather have that musky male smell, that normal smell. So I'm writing all these down, and I'm going to go to Macy's and check these all out. But I am still looking for that one kind of unique one, so we'll see what happens. As I was saying earlier in the show, so come January 1st, you know, the first second after midnight, marijuana will be legalized for recreational use here in Illinois. And as I said, there are a lot of issues that are surrounding this. It's going to be interesting to see how all this shakes out. There's not many vices left that are illegal. If you think about it, we've got gambling, legal, and especially sports gambling now, too, legal. We've got marijuana, legal. Alcohol, legal. I mean, how many more? I guess prostitution is the last one left. And even in Las Vegas, that's legal. I wonder if in the next couple of years that might not be legalized as well. I mean, as I said, these used to be these major vices as the country was much more puritanical and much more religious-based. And now a lot of people are much more looser in their kind of moral strictness, and those old vices that were one time thought to be bad for your soul, they don't seem to be as bad as they are, as long as they make money. Governments are so hard up for revenue, they're saying, you know what? Yeah, you know what? They're a sin, but we need money. And so we will see what happens. But so I've been interesting. I've been reading a lot of the newspapers over the last couple of weeks as this is getting closer. Interestingly enough, one of these articles said that Illinois could grow 1 million pounds of marijuana by 2025. 1 million pounds. Wow. That's a lot of stoners, man. Once again, you could say what you want. A lot of people are saying, hey, should I invest in this and all these new dispensaries and these companies? Like Tom said earlier, Tom Hush, the producer tonight, I think you better, you know, invest in Doritos and Pringles and Snickers. And whatever munchies, you know, Bugles, you name it, whatever the munchies are, because I believe the munchie world, Tostitos, you know, Cheetos, the munchie world, I think. I'm no Kramer, you know, trying to give you your new stock tip. Okay, now here's what you got to do. No, but I'm telling you, think about the a lot of times it's these little things you don't think about. So, yeah, everybody's going to be buying marijuana, but if they're going to be, you know, getting baked and smoked, I think they're going to be about 2 a.m, like right around now. What do you chew? Whatever bag you're biting into now, turn it around, see who makes it, and invest in that company.
And Visine eye drops.
And, yeah, no kidding, because you got to go to work the next day. Now, here's another thing. This is not my big discovery, but I thought of this as well. So I'm going to love to hear this. And I wish he was on today. He's not. So Illinois could grow 1 million pounds of marijuana by 2025. Is Orion Samuelson going to start talking about the marijuana crop?
We've got 4,000 hogs and 200 lids.
I mean, is Orion? I mean, let's face it. If that becomes a million pound, that is agriculture in this state. Orion Samuelson is going to have to report not only on pork bellies and corn and soybeans, he's going to have to talk about marijuana. Wow. Orion, I want to tape that. I want to hear the first time Orion talks about the marijuana crop. on his Sunday morning show. Oh, my gosh. He's going to have to. That's not even a joke. It's interesting, but it's true. A lot of suburbs also within the Chicagoland area are saying no to dispensaries in their towns, which is interesting. But here's, you know, the mind of an Elton Jim. So I'm thinking about marijuana, and the reason was I was walking down the street, and I heard a conversation from somebody, and it dawned on me instantly as soon as I heard this conversation. So two guys were talking about marijuana. I don't know what they were saying in general, in specific, but I just heard this. And so one of the guys says, well, I only took five milligrams, right? So I'm assuming he had one of those edible things, maybe. He said, I only took 5 milligrams. And so I'm sitting there, and I think to myself, okay, now, you know, when I was a young kid in grammar school, they were trying to change our system to the metric system when in the mid to early 70s. And in our classes, they began to teach us the metric system. And they even had a very crude, and I'd love to see if this is on YouTube, a little television show on a closed circuit TV, which was big, big technology for the 70s. And the guy would come on, and he was Metric Man. And he was dressed up like Superman, but he had a big M on his chest with a cape. And he would say how, you know, a kilogram is 100 this. And, you know, and he was, and we did this for about a year. And then it all of a sudden one day, Metric Man was gone. I remember it was about my second or third grade. There was this big push about the metric system. And that's why today, which sounds kind of crazy when you think about it, why do we sell pop in 2-liter bottles? We sell pop in 2-liter bottles and 1-liter bottles because of that back then. They were trying to, you know, because we buy milk in gallons and pints and quarts. And so they were trying to move the metric measurements into the mainstream, into products. And the only thing that, and so they started with soft drinks because that was a big industry. And even though the metric system conversion push died a very quick death and was never mentioned again, we still have the 2-liter bottle because of that. And there are some things that are sold in metric measurements. So here's what popped into my mind when I hear these guys talking about, I just took 5 grams or 5 milligrams, whatever he said. You know, back in the 70s, the country was still very, you know, we were not a global, you know, economy or a global society. We weren't connected to everybody like we are today with the internet. So we were an isolationist, but there was still this made in the USA, USA is great. And there, the pushback against converting to the metric system, because if you remember, the rest of the world uses the metric system. If you ever go to Europe or any other country, they will say that's 5 meters away. It's 10 kilograms. Everybody uses the metric system, and we should, because it's so easy. It's based on tens. It's a very simple system to figure out, as opposed to ours. You know, 3 feet is 36 inches. Where the heck did that come from? What does that mean? Everything is 10, is based on 10 in the metric system. It's so simple. But back in the 70s, we were still very kind of, hey, we're the USA. We won World War II. We're not changing an old European thing. We're staying with our own system, even though it's difficult, it makes no sense, and it's antiquated, it's ours. And that was kind of our view. But today we live in a much more diverse world. We live in a much more diverse perspective of our place in the world. And so here's the thing. When marijuana becomes legal here in Illinois, and it's only a matter of time before it federally becomes legal, and it's legal in all 50 states as a federal law, people are going to begin to use metric measurements more often in their everyday conversation, because where do illegal drugs come from? They come from out of this country. So that's why you always hear about 50 kilos. You always hear metric measurements when drugs are confiscated because that's the way they're shipped, because they're shipped from out of our country. So my point is, as marijuana, even on a low level here, becomes legal and more people on a regular basis start to talk about marijuana, and when you go into the dispensary and he says, would you like, you know, would you like 5 grams or would you like 10 grams? Would you like to, you know, you're going to start hearing the metric measurements more. And I believe, very subtly, there won't even probably be a big push or some big thing, but I think as time goes on, the average person is going to get more comfortable using metric, you know, jargon and the lexicon. They'll start to learn a little more about it. Well, wait a minute, what does 5 milligrams mean? I mean, well, think about it. When you get whatever kind of medication you get, it's in milligrams or grams. So it's already there. But I think the marijuana thing is very social. And so you're going to talk to your friends about it, and you're going to start using the jargon and using the lingo. And I don't know if you're going to start using lid and nickel bag as much as some people might. But you are going to be using the metric measures. And I wouldn't be surprised, as a byproduct of marijuana being legalized, ultimately, I think federally within the next 4 or 5 years, I wouldn't be surprised within the next 5 or 10 years, without us knowing it, we actually may shift to the metric system. You go into a car now, it has, you can use kilometers on your odometer as well as miles. So we're kind of there, and this marijuana legalization actually might push it into people saying, why not? We're already talking in these terms. I'm already learning a little more about it. And wow, it seems much easier. I wouldn't be surprised if a byproduct of the marijuana legalization is that the United States, 40 or 50 years later, finally converts to the metric system like the rest of the world. Because really, it's so silly that we don't have the metric system when most industrialized countries all throughout the whole world use the metric system. So let's just put that in your back pocket, or even better, put this in your rolling paper and remember and see if I'm right in about 5 or 6 years. The United States will convert to the metric system. That's my Nostradamus prediction for right now. Jim Tirano filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Tirano with you here at WGN 720 AM in the great city of Chicago. Filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. I'll be here till 5 AM and we'll pass things off to the opening bell. But what I wanted to talk about, in fact, I wanted to talk to this music in the background is being played because I like to do a segment called the Pop Culture Club. Did you get that, folks? Pop Culture and Culture Club. Do you get it? That's why I'm playing Carmel Chameleon. See, this is why you stay up at 2 in the morning, just to hear really cool. This show has so many layers. Like I said, when I'm gone, people will listen back to these shows and say, wow, I never really got it. It's like a Bullwinkle cartoon. It works on so many levels. It's like the Muppet Show. But one of the things I like to do here in the Pop Culture Club is talk to a pop culture guru, Mick Kaler. Hello, Mixter. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, buddy. How about yourself?
Very good. I don't know if you were listening earlier to the program here, but and we've got a few topics that we're going to talk about, but I thought a few of them are spilling over, and so I thought we would go with it. And I think, I don't know, I don't want to say this, but I think the marijuana legalization is a topic you might be able to speak to.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I thought you might have some expertise.
Just a little.
Yeah. What are you munching on right now?
I'm good.
Okay. No munchies?
No, nothing like that.
Because I was saying that, you know, if you want to, you know, like Kramer, like, you know, the guy that tells you what stocks to invest in,
right,
on cable. My thing is, forget about, investing in the dispensaries. Invest in snack foods.
Well, that's what I keep saying. It's like if you put up a pizza parlor or a Doritos truck right outside one of those dispensaries, you're going to make a fortune.
Yeah, no kidding. But I, just in general, I think when you go to your local grocery store, you're going to find it much harder to find Bugles than it used to be.
Yeah, exactly. They have to double up on their stock orders.
Well, I was talking a little earlier here about, you know, he's in January 1st, recreational marijuana use becomes legal in Illinois. And I was saying that a byproduct, I believe, for the country, because I think it's only a matter of time until it's a federal legalization law. You know, states are doing it piecemeal, but I think ultimately they're going to have to just, smoke the roach and do it and do what they need to do. It's silly to have every state. You drive into one state and it's legal. You drive the next one, you get arrested.
Yeah,
I mean that's not the way the American system works. But I was looking here at the phone. A few people still want to talk about it now. But my point was, I believe the more we use marijuana use becomes more prevalent, and more people use the metric measurements of which most marijuana is sold by, like grams and kilos. I believe that is going to subtly seep into our lexicon, seep into our everyday life. And if you remember, I'm sure what was happening. Do you remember when they tried to convert us to the metric system like 40 years ago?
Yeah, back in the 70s, sure.
Yeah, remember Metric Man?
I remember that. I also remember at some of the baseball stadiums, like at I think it was Cincinnati's Riverfront Stadium, they had the the distance of the on the outfield walls. It would say 400 feet, and it would say X amount of meters too.
Yeah, and like and one of the remnants of that push in the 70s is the 2 or 1 liter bottle of soft drinks.
Yeah, exactly. You can start buying popping liters. Remember that? Yeah,
and that's where it came from. So. I think that as more people just start to get used to the language of, a milligram or a kilogram or, and things like that, I think there's not going to need to be some big major push, but I believe within maybe 5 or 10 years, a byproduct of the legalization of marijuana may be also the transition to the metric system for the United States. It only makes sense. Every other country uses it.
You know, I heard you talking about that, and I wondered this. Maybe the legalization of marijuana from the get-go was a plot to get us to the metric system.
So really, it wasn't about the marijuana revenues.
No, it wasn't about getting high or, get the munchies or any of that stuff. It was all about, we got to get on the metric system, guys. This will be the way to do it.
I want to know how many meters it is to Cincinnati.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's go to the phones here. Some people want to talk pot and metric system. So Joe's on the line. Hello, Joe.
Are you kidding me? I'm on the phone with Mick Kaler.
Yeah, Mick and Jim. How about that?
Oh, lucky day, man. Hey, it's great to talk to you. I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy.
Well, we know that, but go on. We know that, but continue.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about the cologne scent.
Oh, okay.
You set it up. You set it up really well. Uh-huh. How about the cannabis cologne?
Oh, like that?
Ooh, yeah,
that's not. Yeah, because right now,
you remember the patchouli oil back in the days?
Sure, the hippie oil. Yeah,
I remember that smell.
Yeah.
I remember that smell coming out of my favorite record store.
And what was your favorite record store?
Well, I'll tell you, my favorite record store was a place at Six Corners on the northwest side on Irving near Cicero. It was a place called Sounds Good, and you walked down some stairs into it, and I swear to God, now, at the time, I was a teenager, and even I used to buy records when I was, 10, 11, or 12 years old, so I didn't get it. But now, in retrospect, there's no question that there was a lot of illegal stuff going on in that store, at the very least.
There always was, but you always smelled the patchouli oil.
Yeah, or if they weren't selling it, maybe, and I can't say that they were doing that or not, but what I can say is the guys were always in the back room. You could have walked out with 15 albums and didn't even know you were in there.
Yeah, you know what? They were. They always came walking out, and they had the long hair, and they're like, It is a can I help you, man? Yeah, I want to buy a record.
Oh yeah, take it, man. Just take it.
Yeah. What was the first album you bought, Jim?
Gosh, the first album I bought. It's hard to remember the first album. I mean, obviously, when I got into albums is when I got into Elton, and I would probably think probably the first album I ever bought was probably Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
Because that was 73,
because, you know, when I was younger, you still bought 45 vinyl singles. You know, I wasn't really buying albums. I was still, you know, the early times, I was still listening to AM radio and listening to the AM top 40 stations. I wasn't really into album rock yet.
How old are you? I don't mean to call you out, but how old are you?
I'm 55.
Okay. I'm going to be 60 on Pearl Harbor Day.
Oh, well, that's a nice anniversary.
Yeah. Man, it's really cool to talk to you guys.
Well, that's very good, Joe. I appreciate that. But I like your idea of cannabis cologne. It's right around the corner. It's right
cannabis
around the corner.
Cologne, man. We'll trademark it right now. We can go. I mean, I'll talk to Kevin Matthews. I know his lawyer, Jimmy Shorts.
There you go.
I know Frank, the attorney. I know all them guys.
All right, Joe. Well, thanks a lot, man. And don't Bogart that joint.
All right.
By next Christmas, that'll be happening. You know, instead of Dad getting Old Spice from his kids,
right,
it'll be the weed cologne.
Well, you're seeing there's all these hemp related products now that are coming out. And what's that? The C, my millennial friend here knows. What is that?
CBD.
CBD.
My grandma uses that.
Does she? Yeah, she rubs it on like her joints and stuff. Yeah,
she gets sore hands. You know, she's been a homemaker for 50 plus years.
Yeah,
you know,
that's the new. You know, new age, you know, instead of St. John's wort.
St. John's pot.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny you mention that about the CBD. I was just getting gas at a local gas station yesterday, and they have a big stand inside the gas station of CBD products.
Oh, yeah. No, that's definitely one of the big... once again, byproducts of the legalization of marijuana, as I said, as it continues to creep across the country, you are seeing more of that. That is the big. I bet you, if you talk to any kind of a marketing guy, that's the hot new product out in the market where they're going to continue to, to make new kind of products based on that. That's the new buzzword, though.
Sure.
Even though, of course, I didn't even know what the letters were. What is it now?
Now you're hip.
CBD.
CBD.
Cannabinoid. Cannabinoids.
Is that what it is?
Yep.
Okay. See? Yeah. As you can see, I'm really, I'm really high on the millennial meter here. I'm really cool.
Mr. Square.
CBD. I thought it was like Colonel Sand. I didn't even know what you were talking about. I thought it was KFC you were talking about. But anyway, well, I'm talking to Mick Kaler here. We're going to talk about a whole bunch of things with him in the pop culture world. We're going to be talking about the millennial meter with him and Tom little later on. I want to talk a little Irishman, because that's coming to Netflix this week on Wednesday, the great Martin Scorsese film with Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci and Al Pacino. And I also want to tell you, Mick, I went to see Elvis Costello at the Chicago Theater.
I saw on Facebook that you did that.
Yeah, pretty cool. So we got a lot of stuff to talk about here. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio at 720 WGN in Chicago. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto, Elton Jim, filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Be here till 5 a.m. On my phone is our guest here, Mick Kaler, pop culture guru. We should mention that Mick's work can be heard on a regular basis on WGN television on the morning news show. Mick, along with a friend and collaborator, Al Flash, write headline-making, news-making, connected parody songs, and they are often played on the WGN TV morning news. Anything of late, Mick?
Yeah, we got a little something that I can't talk too much about, but it's kind of a play on one of their new bits they're actually doing on the show. We've got it in the works. So
what are you?
We're always thinking of something new.
What are you, Cardi B? I mean, you can't.
Yeah.
when does your new parody song drop, Mick?
Real soon. soon, hopefully within a few days, but maybe right after the holiday.
Oh, boy. But anyway, so actually, I was talking before about the legalization of marijuana, and I don't know if you were listening to me earlier, Mick, but as I was saying, I read an article this week because marijuana will be legalized in January 2020, just a few weeks from now. Illinois could be one of the biggest, you know, crops, generators of marijuana crops in the country, and maybe hit 1 million pounds by 2020. And so how great is this going to be when Orion Samuelson has to read pork bellies, soybeans, green beans, and marijuana?
Marijuana futures.
The marijuana futures. 4,000 hogs, 200 million pounds of pot.
That and rolling papers, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, get the job rolling papers out, too. Wow, that's another company you better start to invest in. But, yeah, so I was saying that I also think that a byproduct of the drug culture, as it becomes more mainstream, as at least marijuana becomes legalized, that we will begin to use on a regular basis more metric terms. And even though 40 years ago, while the government tried to push the metric system on us and the majority of the people at that time were not willing to change to some commie system, now we have a much more connected, diverse looking kind of world. And I believe that the more people use marijuana and the more that they use the terms, the metric terms, because that's what marijuana is sold in grams and kilos and things like that, I wouldn't be surprised, just through osmosis, just through a subtlety of getting used to the terms and used to the measurements and understanding them better, I wouldn't be surprised within the next 10 years if America totally converts to the metric system. And who do we got here on the phone? Mark. Mark wants to talk about that. How you doing, Mark?
Good, Jim. You're giving me cold sweats from back when I was in fifth grade.
Yeah, do you remember Metric Man?
I do. As soon as you brought that up, yeah. I remember that.
Yeah.
On the closed circuit TV.
Exactly. And you have to remember, back then, I mean, Tom, my producer, Millennial Tom, he's looking at me like, you know, my gosh, you are older than Methuselah. But
sat up out of a coffin.
Yeah, he looks at me like I'm a grain of salt. But he, you know, we used to have, when they brought this closed circuit television into the classroom,
yep,
that you thought that this was like the year 2000.
Yeah, yep. It was like a major movement.
Yeah, like, holy cow, we can watch television that isn't Match Game 74?
Right?
Yeah, and if you remember, Metric Man, I haven't gone on YouTube. I should go to see if Metric Man is on. In fact, Tom, could you look that up to see if Metric Man might be on YouTube? Because you know that the production values of Metric Man had to be horrendous.
For back then, yeah.
Yeah, that you know that. And yeah. I just remember Metric Man was like Superman. He had a cape, and he had a big M on his chest.
Yep.
And he was trying to tell us about, meters and liters and... and I remember we with this every day or every once a week, we had to learn that, and suddenly Metric Man just disappeared. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I would come home with anxiety because I would.
Well, here's the sad part. You learn all that. Let's say you master all the metric stuff, and you're like, okay, I'm ready for the world and doing this. And then the next thing you know, they go, oh, you know, all that stuff that we taught you in school that you were sweating about, had all that anxiety, forget about it. We're not going to do it.
Oh yeah, and that's what it was like. It was almost like, like he said, and like Mark was saying, that we used to have tests on this.
Yeah,
yeah. This wasn't just,
and then
kind
it
of,
was just gone one day.
Yeah, and it wasn't just some subtle thing. Now, now Tom said you've got some Metric Man audio. Go ahead.
Yeah.
All around the world today, the meter is a measure. I simply use a decimal point. 10 is a number.
A waka 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 waka.
A million is a thousand love. A cent is 100th.
See?
Kilo is 1,000. But 10 you remember.
Are you getting the cold sweats, Mark?
I am. Getting
flashbacks.
Well, I don't remember. I don't remember Metro Man being this funky.
A million is 1,000 love.
Is that Chaka Khan?
Earth, Wind, and Fire there.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, it sounds like Parliament. But yeah, I mean, but see, once again, if you listen to it, the metric system is all based on tens.
It's a real easy thing to master.
It is so easy. The rest of the world uses it. I got an interesting text. Some guy said he's driving right now in Savannah, Georgia, and he goes, "Are you one of those guys that just love the Queen?" And you want to go to the metric system? No, I'm just saying is that I think the more we use these terms, you will find if you do just a very cursory kind of research that the metric system makes total sense. It's much easier. As I said, we're over here battling, you know, how many feet are in a yard? How many inches are in 3 yards? I mean, every, you know, it's 36 times, you know, 12. It's all, our system makes absolutely no sense. And I remember learning that even the distance of a foot, you know, 12 inches is like the distance of a king's index finger from his nose.
Yeah, or his elbow to his wrist or something.
Yeah, it's some ridiculous, it's based on nothing. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we go metric. Well, I'm sorry to put you in a cold sweat, Mark,
I just want to say you do an awesome Orion Samuelson.
Thank you very much, and don't forget the marijuana crop will be the biggest in Illinois in 2025. My wife Gloria and I by then will be at Jameson's, and we'll have a fried marijuana. Mmm.
And you know what? If the marijuana futures go up, pork belly futures are going up too.
Oh yeah! Oh, definitely pulled pork sandwiches. Oh yeah! Orion Samuelson doesn't even realize how his entire world and his entire profile is going to completely elevate come January.
You bet.
All of a sudden, people are like, "What did Orion say about the pot crop?" Yeah, so good for you, Orion. You deserve it. He's going to have another renaissance at age 88. Very good. Well, thanks, Mark. And don't forget, kilogram is a thousand. What did she just sing on there?
Kilogram was 1,000 something.
Yeah, because everything is like a centi. Once again, it makes sense. Centi is 100, as in century. It's that. It really is simple, folks.
Right. Well, and the other part of it too, you talk about, you know, the drug culture
and miles per hour, and I'm going kicking and screaming again.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Orion's going to have to talk in kilos and pounds initially.
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
I was going to say when you watch movies where they talk about drugs, they talk about kilos and
right,
stuff.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, they talk about it, and then it's like, well, how much is that? Then you'd see the actual package and go, whoa, that's a lot of dope.
Exactly. Well, Mark, just remember, Metric Man may be flying into your town soon.
All right.
Take care. Good to talk to you. I'm Jim Tirano, filling in for Nick DiGilio. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with whatever this is right after this. Jim Tirano filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning here at WGN, 720 a.m. We'll be here till 5 o'clock. Thank you for staying up. Whether you have insomnia, if you're there to, you're up for the 2:32 feeding, or you're off on the third shift, or you're going to the fourth shift, or whatever shift you're on, hey, I'm going to be here till 5. I don't know what you're doing. I'm here till 5, so, hey, stick around. Keep me company. 312-981-7200 is the phone number and the text number. And I appreciate you folks calling in here. We got a nice little steady stream of texts and phone calls. It's nice that you guys are calling in. Because, you know, while texting is a great innovation, it really has hurt the radio industry because, you know, it's an audio-based medium. So we need sound. And so it's always nice to hear people's voices and interact with you in the moment. So if you feel like talking, give me a call, 312-981-7200, Jim Tirano. I got Mick Kaler on the line with me. We're talking some pop culture stuff. So, Mick, what I wanted to talk about, and I want to get our millennial member of the group here, Tom Hush, the producer tonight, into the discussion as well. But just real quick here, Mick, because I fall on the cusp. You're a few years older than me.
So, right. I was born in 61.
I mean, so you are a baby boomer.
Yeah, I'm official. I'm in the little bracket. Yeah.
Even though I believe that anybody that was born after 1960 is really not a baby boomer. I think the baby boom term was basically about the boom of babies that happened right after the soldiers returned in 1945 from World War II. There was a boom. Whoa. In baby births because these soldiers were coming back,
right? Not a lot of 15-year window there, right?
Yeah, well, but in terms of marketing or even sociology, they like to make these 20-year little nice neat gaps. So 45 to 65 is baby boomer, 65 to 85 is millennial, 85 to 2005 is generation Y or Z, whatever.
Or X, I think it was. Yeah.
Yeah, but my point is that we're at the tail end, and like I said, I don't really have all that much in common with a 75-year-old.
Sure.
So why am I in that group? But regardless, so I was reading a story how, and tell me if this has happened to you yet. The new response of millennials when a baby boomer starts to complain and say how ridiculous they are and what they believe in or how they act and all that other stuff that you hear about millennials, finally millennials are saying we're tired of it, and with two simple words, they are being very effective. It's very dismissive. Basically, the response is, okay, boomer.
Okay.
As in, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah, you're old and we're dismissing your ideas and your put-downs and all that.
Yeah, so now my question to you is, have you been okay boomered yet?
Actually, I have, about a week and a half ago.
Are you serious?
I teach 6th, 7th, and 8th graders.
You were okay boomered?
Oh, yeah. Well, here's what happened. It didn't start with me, you're redirecting a kid or lecturing them. One of my students was asking when I was born, and he was a newer student to my class. The other kids know how old I am, and so I said, I was born in 61. And the next thing I hear is him saying, okay, boomer.
Oh.
Yeah.
So how did that make you feel?
Well, first of all, I was aware of, like you're saying, this phrase that's coming out in the vernacular and all that, and I just redirected him to say, hey, you know me as Mr. Mick, not right. Boomer, and then he's like, oh, okay, but I started thinking about the fact that, yeah, we're going to start hearing this from people who, as you said, they want to dismiss, the ideas or the so-called wisdom of us baby boomers, and I'm just hoping that this thing fades real fast, like twerking, okay?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, for the last several years, as the millennial term became more popular and the millennials began to take their place and their impact and their influence on the culture, given their big numbers, and as they were coming to age in their 20s and 30s, we were starting to see in the media, more stories about millennial this, millennials that. They like this, they like that. They don't like this, they don't like that. And so I started a segment called the Millennial Meter, and I've got a godson named Patrick who is about 34 years old, and I would call him up and talk to him, and I would bounce off, different behaviors that I do to see if they were still cool with the millennial. But I thought I would resurrect that segment today. And Tom Hush, who is the producer here for the show, you are clearly right in the sweet spot.
Yeah, I'm 26.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's got millennial written all. In fact, he hasn't said it to me, but I'm looking in his eyes and I could see an okay boomer.
Yeah, there's a little bubble above his head.
He's got,
says, okay boomer.
Yeah, it's like he's a Peanuts cartoon and there's that little bubble thing. But so now, first of all, have you, is this a media creation, or have you or your friends used this okay boomer line?
It's more of a media, it's a little bit more of a media creation.
Okay, it
I
is.
Think. And I
okay.
think it's more popular, honestly, with people a little bit younger than me. So I've got two younger brothers that fall into the Gen Z thing.
Uh-huh.
So my youngest brother is 19. He's probably more likely to say it than I would.
Okay.
Honestly.
Now, but at the same time, being in the sweet spot of the boomer generation, Are you personally getting a little fed up with the constant, in my day, or boomers are entitled, or they're selfish, or they don't do this right, and they don't do that right. When I was young, we did it this way, and that's the best way, or my music is better, or my... Are you getting a little fed up with that overall?
Yeah, because it's a total lack of self-awareness.
On the older generation.
On the older generation. Listen, I got no real problem with your average everyday person who falls into the baby boomer generation. My dad was a baby boomer. It's fine. I really don't like to paint with a broad brush. But when you have someone of that generation complaining about the music of today, the right. movies of today, this, that, wasn't that already happening when you guys were growing yeah. up? Oh, this yeah, damn rock and roll, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I find interesting, and that's exactly correct, is at the end of the day, there has always been a generation gap. It was there between the greatest generation, and what's ironic is, the baby boomers were the first ones to really rebel in a very loud and obvious and overt way, because they also, like the millennials, had the numbers in terms of population to force change and to at least have their voice heard. But they were the ones complaining against their parents.
What was the saying? Don't trust anyone over the age of 30?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Grow your hair long, you know, burn your draft card, all that stuff.
Yeah. So what I think is funny is that at the end of all of this, there was a generation gap after the first caveman and his kids, you know. So there's always been the older generation thinks the younger generation isn't doing things right. But I'm surprised that it's taken the millennials this long to rebel, because boomers have been giving the millennials a hard time for at least 5 or 6, 7 years, don't you think? Mick?
Yeah, I would say so.
I mean, I'm sitting there going, what took you so long to say I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore? And I'll, you know, the great Howard Beale line from Network. But I tell you though, you know, now if this is just a media creation or who knows, and even though you've been given it, I guess you were okay boomered, but really not in the way it's meant to be. You know, because you said when your student said that to you, he was more referring to you as a boomer, but not for something that you really said.
Yeah, it wasn't a put down. He was just kind of throwing it out there. I think he had just learned the phrase himself.
But I'll tell you, that to me, that's a great put down.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Think when you're in an argument with somebody, right? And say it gets heated and you get all excited, right? What is the one thing that... that the person that you're sort of arguing with or yelling at, whatever you want to say, the way they disarm you and makes you even more mad is when they say, okay, relax.
Oh, right.
I hate when someone does that.
Yeah, calm down, get a chill, collect yourself.
Okay, there's no need to yell. Oh, that's like the worst thing you could say. It's like, yell at me. Don't act like you're all under control and I'm some raving maniac. And that's kind of what the okay boomer line is. They let
it is. I think the best word to describe it is it's dismissive.
Yeah, totally. It's like, you know, they let the boomer go on with their rant.
Yeah.
And then they just give the two-word dismissive, okay, boomer. Wow. Ouch.
Well, you know, the one thing I was going to say about all that, and I was thinking about this while we're talking, last month I went to my 40th high school reunion.
Oh, really?
And a couple friends of mine who are a year older, you know, did theirs last year. And one of the things I've noticed we're all doing more often, whether it's in emails or Facebook or just talking, when we're referring to things, whether it's talking about the younger generation or stuff we're into, there's a pause, and then we go, boy, we're old.
Oh, I know.
And I'm fine with it, because it's like, I'm old, get over it.
Yeah, but at the same time...
That's how I answer back to that.
But you know what's funny, at the same time, my nostalgia and your nostalgia is still... Even though I'm in this baby boomer group, my nostalgia is more from the 80s and 90s.
Sure, you know, exactly.
My nostalgia,
more, getting older and more aware of stuff.
But my nostalgia is I remember watching MTV.
Yeah.
and watching, and then, you know, as MTV TV went on, then you got the shows from the 90s like Friends and Seinfeld. So that's, I mean, even though, like I said, I'm on the cusp here, and I do have memories of the 70s when I was a little kid, so I've got memories of, yeah, Mary Tyler Moore Show and All in the Family and Carol Burnett. But if you really want to talk about my nostalgia, it really is more about the 80s and 90s when I was in my late teens and early 20s.
Sure.
So, as I said, I think it's more of a generation gap. Now, I go back to Tom, our millennial here. So, Tom, do you think that when you look back, because one of the knocks and why the OK Boomer phrase was kind of, you know, developed was because the viewpoint is, from a millennial standpoint, you know, boomers, you keep talking about how bad everything is, but look at the way you guys screwed up this world, and look at what you gave us, and we have to fix all your mistakes. And so it's almost like, yeah, okay, boomer, whatever you say, but look at what you did. Look at all the plastic that's floating in the ocean, and look at the lead in the water in Flint, Michigan, and look at the war, you know what I mean? So is that something that you would agree with to some extent?
Well, I think it would be unfair to say that every baby boomer necessarily knew at the time what they were contributing to. And there's plenty of great people of the baby boomer generation that fought for things like civil rights and environmental rights. So I think it would be painting with, again, a broad brush to say that it's all their fault. But I think the frustration comes from they're in a very convenient position to be criticizing how things are now, when they're, you know, in the latter stages of their life,
right.
You know, many are hopefully they're retired, or they're, you know, right, in a very advantageous position in their work life where they don't have to worry about these things. You know, they have gotten to where they are and they're good.
Right.
Meanwhile, folks like me who are under 30,
right,
things don't look great for us. Like, yeah, buying, right, the housing market, like, kind of doesn't exist. You know, it really doesn't exist.
You're trying to establish yourself. Sure.
Yeah. What am I supposed to do now? I'm lucky. I've got a full-time job with a great company that I really enjoy, and I get to do that every day. But
listen to how he's sucking up.
Just letting everybody know.
Keep going, Tom.
Just in case somebody, it's just in case somebody's listening.
Is my nose looking a little brown?
Yeah, wow, brown. It's burnt sienna.
But a lot of folks my age, a lot of my coworkers, still in the service industry, working, right, jobs that they don't really want to be working but have to.
Yeah.
I worked in a movie theater for a large period of time out of college. I got a great college education from Loyola,
right,
a great university,
and
I'm still, you know, yeah, I was still cleaning up popcorn underneath, right, seats for 3 years.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, that's the thing, you know, when all is said and done, and believe me, I've, you know, what I used to always say about the, at the end of my millennial meter segment with my godson Patrick, we would go through, I was talking about at the time, you know, beards and you know, the different clothes and the different things. And at the end of this segment, I would say to Patrick, I love you with all my heart, Patrick, but I hate everything you stand for. And, you know, it was more of a joke than anything else. But really, it is, at the end of the day, there's always been a generation gap. And you know, the OK Boomer thing, you could say that about the baby boomers, but at the end of the day, if you look back, you know, there was protests about the Vietnam War, and we don't go into wars as quickly as we used to because of those protests dating back to then. And there is now a more of a distrust in the government, and rightfully so, and more of a call for transparency because of the Vietnam War and because of things like Watergate. And let's not forget, in the baby boomer generation, they fought about civil rights. I mean, there was horrible segregation in this country, and that was washed away. And so there's no doubt every generation looks at the younger generation like they don't know what they're doing. But then every generation does have its time and does have its moment when they do accomplish things. So I think both sides have to look at each other. And, you know, as somebody just texted, you know, I'll just put it this way. You know, we'll take the OK Boomer, but at the end of the day, we can also throw back an OK Millennial.
Going backwards, right?
So how's that? So right now, I'm going to do that by saying it's about 2:48. I'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more of whatever this is. And is that, should we do that? Okay, millennial. No sweatshirt.
Okay, Boomer.
Jim Toronto here, filling in for Nick DiGilio at WGN 720 AM. I've got Michaela on the phone here. We're talking some pop culture issues. Right now on the docket is the apparently a new phenomenon called OK Boomer, which is the millennial response to a boomer who may get on a soapbox and tell a millennial just how wrong they are and how better the baby boomer generation was and how millennials are doing this wrong and that wrong, and you're still living at your parents' house and you're on their couch and you're entitled and blah, blah, blah. And Mick, like I was saying, I'm surprised it's taken millennials this long to rebel.
Good with, so there you go.
Oh, I'm sorry, say that again.
They found something to do with, you know, to get back at us, so there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to think, when you were growing up, how were you a rebellious kind of, did you and your parents get into any kind of, you know, do you ever butt heads on either politics or, you know, rock and roll? I mean, where were you at?
Not really. My parents were, you know, my sister was 4 years older than I, and they let us kind of do our thing, but they kind of kept us in check. We had a lot of room to, you know, listen to our music and all that. And especially my mom, she was kind of hip to some of it. So I really didn't have that, I guess you'd say, clash of generations like some people did. But I know a lot of people who did go through that.
Well, you know, it's funny because my parents were older when they had me.
Right.
My mom was in her early 40s. My dad was in his late 30s. And so they were both, you know, from the Depression era. You know, they were little kid. I mean, they don't remember it per se, but they certainly were born, you know, in that era. And so, like I said before, I find myself like a lost boy. I don't know where I fit because I grew up with the Depression generation parents who, you know, kind of infused me with that view of the world. But then as I grew up and got older, I was more in tune and more influenced then by the baby boomer generation, by the rock and roll generation, by the more permissive, you know, viewpoint of that world, as which was in direct conflict with, you know, the Depression era world. And then as I was in my 20s, in my teens, in my 20s and 30s, then, you know, as I said, you get more, that took another step into even more kind of the new age view of the world.
Right.
And so then that plays a role, not as much. So I really feel like I'm hovering over all of it. I don't know.
You're kind of a misfit toy. You're not
yeah,
sure where to fit
exactly.
In.
Yeah, I'm on the planet of, I'm that jack in the box that, you know, that bounces out the wrong way or something from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. But yeah, and so that's why I actually think, you know, in kind of talking about this, I try to have more of an objective view because I sort of see almost three legitimate claims.
Right.
Of, like Tom is saying, from the millennial generation of, hey, you know, there are things that your generation took for granted that we can't automatically take for granted. Like you were saying, I mean, is it really true that, like right now, you're saying in your world, buying a house seems really out of the realm of possibility?
It's almost completely out of the realm of possibility.
Is that wow?
I think for the average millennial, and I'm,
because you're how old?
I'm 26.
Okay, I was married at your age.
Yeah, my mom had me at 27.
Yeah,
I will say that I own the place that I live. It took a long time to get that money together, but I do, and it was important that I did own it. But most of my friends are like, "How do you even own property?
Right,
like, what do you mean you own property?
Right, exactly.
You're 26. You can't own property.
So,
is that legal?"
So do you resent, like I said, and please just be honest, do you resent, like, geez, how come it's harder now than it was before? But I got news for you. It was never easy, and there never really was a good old days. Everybody talks about the good old days. There was no such thing ever.
No, I don't spend my time resenting. It's not really worth it because at the end of the day, yeah, I get upset, especially when I have to read an article, millennials are killing chilies. Who cares? Who cares if they're killed? I don't want to go to Chili's.
Right. Yeah, you've been there once. That's enough.
Yeah. You don't want to blossom out of what's the big onion thing?
Yeah,
the
blooming onion.
Yeah. Blooming onion. Yeah.
The blooming onion or whatever it was called. Yeah. No, it was Outback.
I can save money by staying and cooking at home, which is what my grandparents used to do. They cooked for their families. Going out was not a thing.
Right.
So, well, I mean, I'd rather do that.
But here's the thing that people forget, too. It wasn't always easy. I know it's not easy now, but think about this time, since you say you bought your place, and I don't know what your interest rate is. I'm sure it's probably about 3 or 4, 5%. You don't have to specifics, but let me just so you know, in 1977, it was 15%.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah.
It was 15. And here's another thing about revisionist history, folks, just so you know, and I'm not putting anybody down or praising anybody. I'm just telling you facts. Everybody, you know, in these days, they're looking back and saying, oh, the good old days. As I said before, whatever those good old days were, when you peel the blossom, the blooming onion, I got news for you. Things weren't always that great. And so just keep that in mind, that every generation has had their moment and every generation has had their downfall. We'll keep talking about this a little later. Toronto with you here this morning, filling in for Nick DiGilio, and we are in the midst of the Pop Culture Club segment with Mick Kaler on the phone. How are you doing there, Mixter?
Doing great, buddy.
So what I wanted to talk about are some movies that are coming out, both, or that are either at the movies, coming out, or coming to a streaming service near you, because now you have to say that. It's amazing how... What, just about maybe 4 or 5 years ago, the stream was kind of this cool hipster little niche thing, and now it is big business and prime time.
Well, and we talked about this before. I saw a poster for the movie The Good Liar, which I saw last week, and it says only in theaters.
Right.
As opposed to some of the other things like The Irishman or Marriage Story, where... it's in theaters, but also, as you said, on a streaming service, too.
Yeah, Netflix has certainly entered the world of theatrical releases. At one time, it was just offering content on its service. But as Netflix continues to be such a dominant force, and one of the things I wanted to talk about that's coming out this week is The Irishman, which is a film that Netflix made, funded, to the tune of anywhere, if you read, different accounts, anywhere from $159 million to $200 million.
Yeah.
Mainly because of the CGI costs to de-age the aging cast that included Al Pacino and Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci and Harvey Keitel and so many other actors who have to go back in time. And in De Niro's character's case, back to when he was in his 20s during World War II. And I have seen The Irishman, but before I talk about that, I did want to mention this Good Liar film that you were talking about, Mick, because I love Ian McKellen. He's one of my favorite actors of all time. He was so great. There was a PBS show a few years ago called Vicious. I hope people saw it, with Derek Jacobi, and they played a gay couple in living in England, and it was vicious. It was so snarky and so sarcastic, and Ian McKellen was just, he had his his bitchy sharp knife out throughout the entire show, and I just think he's one of the great actors. I actually thought he stole the Da Vinci Code from Tom Hanks.
Okay,
remember that scene? Do you remember?
Oh, sure. Code?
Where he was the guy that had all the stories about Da Vinci and the Last Supper and Mary Magdalene. And when Ian McKellen comes into the Da Vinci Code, it's like a whole different movie. He was
right, so, yeah, he brings it up to that level, yeah.
So tell me about The Good Liar.
Well, The Good Liar stars Ian McKellen and Helen Mirren, and it's like one of the critics said, it's nice to see a couple of older actors on screen where they're not dying, okay? That's not their role.
Yeah, right.
And,
well, they don't have dementia or Alzheimer's.
Yeah, exactly, battling some kind of thing like that, or they're the crazy uncle or whatever, aunt or grandmother. Anyway, Helen Mirren plays this widow who's looking for companionship, and Ian McKellen answers her online ads. They are actually into the computers and all that, and it basically turns into this situation where Ian McKellen is trying to scam her out of her money, because that's what he's been doing all his life. And I don't want to spoil anything, but it takes some other turns in his past and her past as well. And it's just a great cat and mouse movie. You don't know where it's going to go next and what surprises are going to come up. And it's the kind of movie that you don't want to end because you're enjoying it. And I gave it a strong B+ because I really enjoyed it.
So how is their chemistry, Helen Mirren and Ian McKellen?
They're great. They play their roles. Their roles are so well written that they just mesh together so well, and she's kind of cautious of him at the beginning, and then they kind of, you know, bond together, and then she's got this grandson who's very suspicious of Ian McKellen, you know, trying to scam her out of money and all that. It's just like I said, just a lot of fun to watch. I might even go back and see it a second time.
Wow, that's a pretty good endorsement, because that when I saw the trailers and the coming attractions, it's one of those movies that, you know, you can't deny the cast.
Right.
And the caliber of the cast, but you know, when I'm watching the trailer, I'm like, okay, this one is one of those movies that could be on the cusp. In that, am I seeing the best scenes right now in this 30-second trailer? And when I go there, there's going to be another 90 minutes of just a bad movie. And I saw the best, you know, minute and a half here. Or is it going to be a great movie? So it's good to hear that it actually lives up to its potential given the cast.
Right, and you bring up a great point about the trailers, because, and I've had this complaint for years, that so many trailers show either all the good things or all the spoilers.
Right.
You know, I always say this, if Empire Strikes Back had come out today, you would know in the trailer that Luke Skywalker's dad was Darth Vader.
Wait, oh, spoiler alert. Wait a minute!
You haven't seen that yet.
What?
You're in trouble. Okay?
What? Well, because these days, I think a spoiler alert is like, even it goes past 40 years at this point. You can't talk about
a big window going on.
Yeah,
there,
you
right?
Can't even talk about All in the Family.
Yeah.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Wait a minute, bigot! What are you talking about? I haven't watched that one yet.
Well, anyway, with The Good Liar, it's like there is so much more to it than just what you see in that trailer, and I think that's what makes it that much more enjoyable too.
Oh well, that's good to know, because that is one that I was keeping my fingers crossed. I was at the actual theaters, and I saw that, and I've seen the trailer on television as well. And I was like, wow, I said, I'm such a fan of McKellen. And in the scenes I saw in the trailer, he just looked like he was doing a great job. And I'm like, geez, I just hope this isn't the best of it, because this is one that I might actually want to go see. And so I'm glad you said that. Maybe,
yeah, you'll definitely like it.
That may be a Thanksgiving day. If are theaters open on Thanksgiving?
Oh, they're open every day. Come on.
Yeah, man, that might be a Thanksgiving Day post-meal.
There you go.
Yeah.
After you're digesting your turkey.
So yeah.
I do that. Well, I always see a movie on Christmas Day, and I'm saving that movie about the shenanigans going on at the Fox Network, Bombshell.
All right.
I am literally saving that for Christmas Day, even though it comes out a couple weeks before that. It's like, that's the movie I'm going to see on Christmas Day.
Yeah, Charlize Theron plays Megyn Kelly in that.
Right, she looks just like her.
Yeah. Well, another movie that I want to talk about that I'm really excited about, but I'm looking at the clock, I'll take a quick break, so I'll just tease that. As I said, one of the most anticipated films of the year is Martin Scorsese's The Irishman. It was released to theaters on a very, very limited basis. Just two theaters in the Chicago area. I drove out to Highland Park to see it. It was
right.
Only in Highland Park in a Landmark theater, I think, on Clark Street, and that was it. And basically, it was released just to be considered for Oscars, because Netflix paid $200 million for this, so they want to get their money's worth by premiering it on their streaming service. And so this Wednesday, if you want to see The Irishman, it will be available on Netflix. And I have seen it, so we'll talk a little bit about that movie and some other things coming out this week. A neat kind of Agatha Christie movie, whodunit, called, Tom, what's the name of the movie again?
It's called Knives Out.
Knives Out. And,
I saw a preview for that.
Yeah, Rian Johnson, who wrote and directed, The Last Jedi, the last Star Wars film, wrote and directed this. It's got Jamie Lee Curtis, It's Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig. Yeah, it's a really good cast, and it's supposed to be a really good whodunit. So that's one that I want to at least. I haven't seen it yet. It's coming out this week, but I just wanted to give a little shout out because it kind of looks like it might be some interesting thing. So we're going to talk about The Irishman right after this. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio here. Be on till 5. Hope you stick with us right now. No switching. It is 3:18 in the morning here at WGN, 7:20 a.m. I'm Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning on our phones. We have Mick Kaler as part of our Pop Culture Club segment, and we're talking some movies here. So, Mick, you gave a thumbs up to The Good Liar starring Helen Mirren and Ian McKellen.
Right.
Which I'm happy about because I said Ian McKellen's one of my favorite all-time actors. And so I'm glad to see that he's in a movie that is worth his talent. Even at his age, I think he's got amazing charisma.
He reminds me as far as, you know, he's always interesting to watch, much like Christopher Plummer always is.
Yeah, Chris, I think Christopher Plummer right now of those kind of older actors, it's Ian McKellen, it's Christopher Plummer, and without a doubt, it is Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, yeah.
My gosh. I don't know if it's a movie that's coming out, but I just saw another thing on TV this morning. It's going to be on the CBS Sunday morning show with Jane Pauley. I believe it's Jonathan Pryce and Anthony Hopkins playing the Popes.
Yeah, I saw the preview for that, too, or the talk. They're going to be covering that next week, right?
So do you think that's John Paul II and then Benedict?
It's possible. I'm not sure. Or maybe it's just a fictitious thing. I haven't read much about it.
Because it looked like the photo that I saw looked like Anthony Hopkins was in the white papal outfit, and it looked like the other, like Jonathan Pryce was in the cardinal outfit. And I remember that's, you know, because Ratzinger, who became Pope Benedict, was his right-hand man.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's the story. But just to see those two, I mean, Jonathan Pryce is a great actor. Many may remember him. He had a small but very cool role in the great film Glengarry Glen Ross.
Oh, yeah.
With Al Pacino.
Played the henpecked customer.
Yeah, he plays Jim. Jim, Jim, Jim. Jim, you saw my book, Jim. I can't do it, Jim. You saw my book. But Jim Link was his name. Jim, you saw my book. He was also, don't forget, he was also in Game of Thrones. He played that religious leader.
Yeah, the head sparrow.
Yeah, there you go, the head sparrow. I love all those names that Game of Thrones had for people. The Khaleesi, the head sparrow. But, I want to talk about The Irishman because I believe, without a doubt, in the next couple of weeks or whatever it is when the Academy Award nominations come out, there's no question that The Irishman is going to be a name that you are going to be hearing multiple times. Directed by Martin Scorsese, starring, you know, the all-star Scorsese cast of Robert De Niro, Joe Pesci. For the first time, Martin Scorsese and Al Pacino working together, along with another old-time pal, Harvey Keitel, in a small but very cool role. Bobby Cannavale is in it as well, plays a small role. There's just a lot of people. I have to tell you, I was so impressed with Ray Romano.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie, but I've seen the scenes that he's in on the trailer, and I'm like, whoa.
Not a big part at all.
Right.
But, you know, Ray Romano has come a long way from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Sure, absolutely. He's done that a few things.
Yeah, he's been in that. He was in that short-lived HBO miniseries called Vinyl.
Yeah.
And then he was in a TV version of Get Shorty, the film that was with Dennis Farina and John Travolta. Yeah. And so I was very impressed. I mean, think about if you're Ray Romano and Martin Scorsese calls you up.
Sure.
Can you believe that? I mean, that had to be similar to me. I remember when I saw Godfather 3 and I saw Joe Mantegna, Chicago's own Joe Mantegna, is, you know, Joey Zaza in Godfather 3. And I'm like, this guy has to be out of his mind when Francis Ford Coppola calls you and you're Joe Mantegna. And you know, in the back of your mind, you grew up watching the two Godfathers. In the back of your mind as an actor, you have to say, especially an Italian actor, you got to say, geez, I wish I was in The Godfather. And then Francis Ford Coppola calls you?
Yeah, dream come true right there.
And same thing, if you're Ray Romano, Martin Scorsese calls you to be up to be in a mob movie? Oh my gosh. And so, yeah, this is a unique film in that I was just reading an article in GQ in an interview with De Niro. So the genesis of this film is interesting in that Scorsese and De Niro were set to make another mob film.
Okay.
De Niro is doing research for his character for this role. As part of his research, he gets this book called I Heard You Paint Houses.
Right.
By this former mob hitman, Frank Sheeran. As he reads this book to do the research for the film he's supposed to do, he says to Scorsese, wait a minute.
We got a better story to do.
We're doing the wrong movie.
Right.
We got to do this one. They go to Paramount and they say, we don't want to do this movie. We want to do this one. And they go, well, wait a minute. This one's already greenlit for $100 million. You don't want to do that anymore? And they say no, and then Scorsese comes back and says it's going to cost $150 to $200 million, and Paramount says pass. So then it's up in the air, and then Netflix swoops in, signs the check, and talk about a dream cast, as I said, De Niro, Pacino, Pesci, coming out of retirement, Joe Pesci, Harvey Keitel, Martin Scorsese directing, and I have to say, it lives up to the expectation and the hype. It's a long film. It's 3.5 hours, but I really didn't look at my watch. You're not going to learn anything new in terms of this is the greatest Scorsese film ever made.
Okay.
It's got everything you want from a Martin Scorsese film. It's got the editing. It's got the camera angles. It's got the great use of music. And it's got the great cast. And it's got the great story. And it's got the violence. It's got everything you want. So it is basically a perfect, again, Martin Scorsese mob film. It has everything you want in it, and it's very satisfying. As I said, it doesn't break any rules, it doesn't break any new boundaries, but if you like a Martin Scorsese mob film, you're going to love The Irishman.
Well, I definitely got to see it, whether I see it in the theater or I may have to start subscribing to Netflix. So one way or the other, I'm going to catch it.
Well, you can watch it this Wednesday. It premieres this Wednesday, November 27th, and that's why I'm talking about it today. I did see it at a theater. As I said, it was only released at 2 theaters in the Chicago area and even released limitedly around the country, basically because they wanted it to be considered and be eligible for the Oscars, but at the same time, Netflix wants to make sure that
they get their
money back. And so I'll talk a little about it. Should I take a break, Tom? Yeah, I'll take a quick break here, and then we'll come back talking about The Irishman and a few other things here. We got Mick Kaler on the line. We're in the Pop Culture Club talking about cool stuff in the pop culture world. That and a whole bunch more after this. I'm Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio. No switching, please. Elton Jim filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Been here since 1 o'clock. We'll be here till 5. Hey, I'm staying up for the next hour and a half. Why can't you? What are you doing that's so important? like many people, Mick, you've got a few days off, right, before Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I got the whole week off from school, so just going to take it easy at home.
Nice. Mick Kaler on the phone with us in the Pop Culture Club. I should also say that in addition to hearing some of Mick's parody songs that appear frequently on the WGN Morning News, you are certainly no stranger to the radio world. Mick's pedigree in terms of being a producer in the Chicago area is pretty impressive. He's only worked for Larry Lujack, Robert Murphy, Ramblin' Ray. Who else?
Big John Howell.
Yeah, no big deal.
I ruined all their careers.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was talking about the Irishman, and one thing I also wanted to mention, and Tom, you can help me out on this, because Tom's a movie buff and actually worked in a movie theater, which is pretty cool. So you were saying, because I know that there was a limited release for this film. It was only in 2 theaters in the Chicago area for The Irishman, one in Highland Park and one on Clark Street in Chicago. I went up to Highland Park on opening day. The first show was at 10:45 because it's a 3.5 hour movie, and the theater wants some, at least to be able to play.
Get enough showings of it. Yeah.
But why were you saying was it really only because it seemed like they're just like small independent or privately owned kind of theaters, or is that not the case?
Well, the Landmark Century, the one here in the actual city of Chicago that was showing it, I mean, that's part of a chain. The Landmark is a chain of theaters.
Yeah.
But the reason that it was being shown in so few theaters was because there's been this rivalry between AMC, which is the single largest exhibitor of motion pictures in America,
right?
And I'm pretty sure the world. They own so many different, they've bought up all these other chains. And Netflix, who are, you know, the titan of streaming. What they're upset about is that Netflix makes these movies, or at least purchases the right to distribute them, and they want to put them in theaters for a period of time, but then get it onto the streaming service as soon as possible. Typically, there's like a 90-day, let's call it 3 months. There's like 3 months between when it gets exhibited in a theater and when it makes it to home media. That's the tradition since the days of VHS.
Right.
Netflix wants to shorten that to like 30 days.
Exactly.
AMC says no, because then that cuts into our profits, our ability to exhibit this film as an exclusive thing that only in theaters, that's important to them. So Netflix didn't want to budge. They say, we don't care. We've got the subscribers. And so AMC flat out refuses to screen any Netflix distributed or produced films.
Any film?
Yeah.
Wow.
So say last year they had Roma, which was up for Best Picture. And one of the absolute best pictures of the year. I loved it.
Yeah.
It's a genius piece of filmmaking. It really only showed in a few theaters, and it was excluded from AMC's yearly Oscar binge that they do.
Wow.
Because they were just like, well, we're not showing Netflix films.
And another film mentioned, you mentioned it earlier, Mick. There's a film with Scarlett Johansson and Adam Driver called The Marriage Story. And that's another one that I believe will get an early December release at probably a few theaters, and then become available within, you know, 2 or 3 weeks on Netflix.
I will say you can see it at the Music Box still right now. I saw it last weekend.
Oh, so maybe December 6th is when it gets on Netflix then.
Yeah, I believe it's going to
be. I think it's been in a couple theaters.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, and if you can see it at the Music Box, one of the great Chicago theaters of all time.
Oh, I love that place.
They're showing it on 35mm film.
Oh,
it looks
nice.
Pristine.
Did you see that film?
Yeah, and it's great.
Is it good? Yeah.
It's very, very good. Devastating if you've ever been divorced.
Yeah, right. I know from one of those.
Now, the one thing I wanted to ask you, so because I knew about the AMC issue at Netflix, and my complaint was, well, wait a minute, why don't you just take it for what you can and show it for that month, you know, before Netflix says, okay, you know, we're putting it on our streaming service. But does it take 3 months for a theater to recoup their investment to take on that movie?
Not necessarily. It's one of those things where the demand creates the hype and creates the want for something.
Okay.
So typically a theater is going to show a movie for minimum of 2 weeks. Usually that's what the rental period is. We'll show it for 2 weeks. If it does particularly well, say you've got a Star Wars, you got a Marvel's Avengers, whatever, we may show it for longer. I know when I was in the theater business, that's when Black Panther came out. We showed that for almost 2 months.
Sure.
Yeah. It was insane. Yeah. So a theater wants to be able to keep renting it, especially if it's popular. The Irishman might be something like that. So they want to have the ability to recoup that investment, those rental dollars, because they're giving like 90% of that ticket price. They don't even keep. They're sending that back to the studio. They owe that on rental dues.
Yeah, right.
But then the other part, like I said, I'm thinking if I'm AMC, hey, 3.5 hour movie, guess what? That's a lot of popcorn. That's a lot of pop. That's a lot of snacks and things like that. I would think they just bite into it and say, let's take what we can get because, like you said, demand. I think a lot of people want to see that movie that don't have Netflix. So it's like, well, let me go out to AMC and see it. So I really think they're missing the boat on this.
You know, well, that when you're the largest exhibitor of motion pictures in the entire country, you can throw your weight around.
You can throw your weight.
You can decide what happens when and where and why. They are the ones who beat out MoviePass. There was that whole thing with MoviePass and hard. And AMC said, you know what?
We're going to crush it.
Yeah, we're going to crush it. No more MoviePass. Join AMC Stubbs A-List. Yeah. It's a better deal and has more features. And look who won.
Well, I'll tell you, I was surprised to see, to your point, Mick, I was surprised. Okay, so I saw it on the first day. I think it was November 5th or something. And I went the first day, the first show, because as I said, there weren't that many screenings at the one particular theater in Highland Park. So it was at 10:45, and I figured, okay, 10:45 in early November on a Friday, you know, what are there going to be, 3 people there? And I was shocked. It wasn't a big theater that it was showing in, but there were a lot of people there.
Oh yeah, well, it's
to
funny,
see the Irishman.
I called that theater, and I talked to the manager about a week ago because I was wondering how long it was going to keep playing at their theater. So I've been up to that theater in the past, and he said that they were selling out a lot of the shows.
Yeah, I mean, so there is definitely. Once again, you know, when you say Martin Scorsese mob film with De Niro, Pesci, and Al Pacino. If you're a movie fan and you like Martin Scorsese, I mean, this is a must-see. And even though it will be in the comfort of your own home, I still believe, I'm one of those old-school guys, I still believe that there is value to seeing a film in its original, in the format that it was originally meant to be seen, and that's on a big screen.
Right.
It certainly, I mean, this is a film, where I could make the argument that you may not lose all that much watching this at home because, once again, it's not CGI filled, but there is still a gravitas to a film on a big screen, and because you know that Martin Scorsese is such a student and a fan of film, that there is so much on the screen, and what is on the screen is there on purpose. He's just not aiming a camera at something. He's deliberately aiming a camera at it for a specific reason. And so often you miss a lot of that nuance when you just watch it on TV, and especially, you know, Scorsese, his use of music is maybe one of his greatest talents. And
right.
To hear that music blast out in a theater kind of environment is certainly makes it adds so much to the experience. But I have to say that when you see the movie, you know, it's one of these things where you get sucked in, and I know it was 3.5 hours long, and what I loved was this line that that De Niro said about the film. He said, "This is how long it took Martin to tell the story." You know, and I love that.
Yeah,
and
like, get over it. This is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. And we are in a very fast-paced world, and people aren't used to that. And to their credit, when I went to the movie theater in Highland Park, I don't know if it was the owner or somebody came out before the film started and said, "Okay, everybody, just so you know, this is a 3.5-hour movie. If you parked in front, that's only 2-hour parking." So
yeah, you're gonna get a ticket, right?
Yeah, so I can't promise you won't get a ticket, but he was actually worried about people in the different parking spots because the film is so long.
Right, well, that was nice of him.
Yeah, but yeah, I think it's definitely worth seeing, whether you see it in the theater or if you have Netflix, certainly it will be easy to see. But it is this Wednesday. I guarantee you that you will hear the name The Irishman said many times, at least at the Oscar nominations. Now, we never know about the winners. But I have to tell you, I don't think I'm going out on a limb here, but, and Tom saw the film too. You know, Al Pacino plays Jimmy Hoffa, was a larger than life character.
Yeah.
This union leader who really was one of the most popular and the most powerful people in the country for many years. It's amazing to think that in today's world, when unions are not as strong as they used to be. But back in the 50s and 60s, Jimmy Hoffa was a major political power. And Pacino plays him big, as he has to. And,
sure.
And of course, Martin, you know, Robert De Niro is basically carrying this 3.5-hour film. He's almost in every scene. But who almost, I have to say, as much as De Niro has screen time, I think, as I said to you before, I think Joe Pesci, about Ian McKellen stealing the Da Vinci Code from Tom Hanks,
mm-hmm.
I think Joe Pesci steals this movie.
From, no kidding.
From Robert De Niro. He's not in it a lot, but his role, he's so quiet and so minimal, and you've got these big characters and these big, you know, events happening in this film. And then they come to Joe Pesci every so often, and he says more with his eyes than he says with his words, and even his lines. If he has, you know, if he strings together three sentences at one time, it's a lot. But he just sort of says, like, "Well, you know what I'm talking about, don't you? you know, I'm trying to help you here. I'm trying to help you here." And it's his eye and his mannerisms. And I believe, and apparently he had to really be, he's been in, in retirement for a while, and apparently De Niro had to coax him and just continue to just belabor him. Come on, come on. We're not going to get this chance again for all of us to be in this movie. This could be our last chance, as Tom said in the break. This could be our victory lap. Let's just do this one last time.
Right.
And he finally relented, and I think he might actually – he's definitely going to get nominated.
No kidding.
Whether he wins or not, I don't know. Because you never know, and but he's in the supporting actor category. He certainly will have a shot. But even if he doesn't win, if you see The Irishman, watch Joe Pesci. His character will just creep up on you, and you can't wait for him to come back.
Whenever he's like a good heads up, right there.
Yeah, whenever he's not in the movie, you want him back
for the
calmness that he brings to it, and at the same time, he's sinister. He's evil. You know, I mean, it's amazing. Let's go to the phones right here. Mary's on the line here. Good morning, Mary.
Oh, hello, Elton. I am interested to hear your opinion on this because, well, I'm staying on topic. Plus, I'm bringing the old topic you had about baby boomers because I'm a baby boomer. But believe me, I'm going to get my needs met with my escapism. I'll do Netflix, whatever. But I know some old timers, late 60s, early 70s, who might be in trouble because some of these shows now, there are some good movies and series where you are strictly streaming. Like, I wanted to turn a relative on mine. There's this Netflix, it's called Subaru Blood on Rome. It's one of the best mob series ever. It's strictly streaming. The later episodes or the later seasons of Grace and Frankie or Frankie and Grace,
right.
They're strictly streaming now too. And I wonder if even I wouldn't be surprised if The Irishman is strictly streaming. I know a lot of people that are never going to see it.
Yeah, no, that is sad.
They can't go to the library or buy it on a DVD.
Well, I think now it eventually will come out on DVD, probably in about 3 or 4 months.
Don't be so sure. I'm telling you, there are a lot of hot movies and things that are no longer going to be on DVD if they're from Netflix.
Yeah, well, the only thing I would say is because I think this film is going to do very well at the Oscars, and so at least the nominations, and so there certainly will be an aftermarket for the DVD. But to your point, it's hard. It's even hard to find a DVD player now. How many people even have a DVD player?
Right.
I mean, it's amazing.
And how about you, Elton? I know you have like 400 in your basement to the ceiling.
Well, those are the CDs.
I'd like to borrow some from you.
But you know, but the DVDs. It's amazing, like that. You know, the streaming thing. Has just, you know, it came out of nowhere, and it grew so fast because they put on some compelling content, especially Netflix with House of Cards, and then the Orange is the New Black, and some of these shows, like you mentioned, the Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda show, which I really enjoy. And so there were these compelling shows that you couldn't get anywhere else. That ultimately, I've told the story, for the first 3 seasons of House of Cards, I didn't have Netflix for the first 3 years. I went to a friend's house at 10 in the morning.
Me and you both.
Yeah, and watched all 12 hours.
Do binge watching,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know, and
we're
just
the only one. Me too.
Yeah, we just stayed there. So, yeah, I mean, it's a new world.
It's gonna mess with the baby boomers.
Yeah, well, definitely, and it's a new world because in the next the Disney Plus channel debuted a few weeks ago. Paramount is going to start with their own and NBC. CBS already has CBS Access.
You got Apple.
Apple TV, HBO Now is going to start. They're going to have original programming. So I think we are in the middle of another television revolution, just like we were back in the 80s when cable took over and all of a sudden people were paying for more channels. We necessarily are not really at this point paying for new channels, but we're paying for better programming because network TV... Mm-hmm. Network TV, if you watch the Emmy Awards and the nominees, network TV is hardly even represented anymore.
Right. You know, Jim, I wanted to bring up when you were talking about the, you know, and Mary, too, about the streaming services. Just yesterday, I saw a preview for a new, I think it's a movie by M. Night Shyamalan, and I was like, oh, this looks really good. And at the end of it, they say, on Apple TV only.
Yeah. I mean,
and I'm like, that's a nice letdown. Thank you.
No, and to your point, Mary, the DVD, these days, any kind of hard, platform, whether it's a CD or a DVD, is getting more scarce, and I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, a movie like The Irishman, I think definitely will get a DVD release. But to your point, a lot of these TV shows and some of these other movies that wind up coming out, we'll just have to keep our fingers crossed, or you will have to make the decision to dip your toe in and take a dive into the stream, you know. So that's,
I'm going to fulfill my escapism, that's for sure.
Well, there you go. We'll have a good
Suburban Blood on Rome on Netflix if you get a chance. It's your people, the Italians.
Oh, there you go.
It's a real mafia. You'll love it.
Thank you so much.
You can't get it on DVD. All right, I'll be borrowing some DVDs from you.
Okay. Have a good Thanksgiving, Mary. Jim Tirano filling in for Nick DiGilio. One paisan to another, if you will. And we'll be back after this brief message. We'll continue to talk about some pop culture things. I want to share with Mick, who I know is a big fan of Elvis Costello. Guess who saw Elvis Costello at the Chicago Theater, Mick?
You must have been you. I saw your pictures.
You tease and you flirt and you shine all the colors on your green shirt. We'll be back after this. Jim Tirano, no switching. Jim Tirano here at WGN, 720 a.m. Elton Jim filling in for Nick DiGilio. Be here till 5 a.m. Have Mick Kaler on the phone with us. We're in the Pop Culture Club talking about some cool things going on in the pop culture world. Movies, television, streaming, you name it. Wanted to throw in a little music thing here. Mick and I are big music fans and one of our favorites. Yes, we saw Elvis together, didn't we?
Yeah, I think so, at the Riviera Theater.
Yeah, we saw the Spinning Wheel tour.
Right, exactly. I've seen him a couple times, and that was one of them.
Yeah, I've seen him about four or five times. I'm a major fan of Elvis, and he came to the Chicago Theater and on Friday, and it was quite a night, because Friday, coming downtown, went to see Elvis Costello. They just happened to be lighting the Christmas tree in Millennial Park.
Oh, that's right. That's a big celebration, yeah.
So I got a chance to see the tree afterward. And then, before, stopped at the Kris Kringle Market.
Sure.
So look at me.
Mr. Christmas, Mr. Elvis.
Mr. Urban Cowboy.
Yeah.
But, I'm currently, we talked about this before, Mick, I'm currently kind of on a See 'Em One Last Time tour.
Before they die, right?
Yeah. And so the Tom Petty death in 2017 really kind of threw me for a loop, because I've always been a major Tom Petty fan, and I was going to see him on his 40th anniversary tour. But, you know, he tours a lot.
Yeah, he comes around every couple of years at least.
Yeah, and so, you know, I said, and he was still relatively young, and I'm like, oh, you know, I was going to go. I don't know what happened. Maybe I just wasn't available at the time he came through Chicago. And as soon as that, I mean, literally two or three days after that that tour ended in Los Angeles at the Hollywood Bowl, he sadly died of an overdose of painkillers for a broken hip that he had.
Yeah, a lot of pain pills he was on.
Yeah, and so all of a sudden, you know, so I all of a sudden it dawned on me that I can't always wait for that next tour, because it may not come.
Exactly. Tomorrow is promised to nobody.
Yeah. So the last year or so since Petty died, I've been looking around at some of the classic rock acts that have been going on tour, and there's certainly many of them in the farewell mode, like Elton John and Bob Seger, but others just still out there plying their trade, like the Rolling Stones and Billy Joel and things like that. So I've actually seen about four or five different people that I've sort of said, okay, this is one of my favorites, so let me just see them at least one more time. I have to say, one of the best shows I saw was up in Milwaukee, actually, in the summer. I saw Mark Knopfler of Dire Straits.
Okay.
At the Riverside Theater, beautiful theater in Milwaukee. But I've seen Sting and the Beach Boys and Ringo. Obviously, I just saw Elton for 197, Mick.
Well, I was just going to say, before you said that, you better go see Elton John before he drops.
Yeah, I know. Well, this farewell tour, which is going to go through 2021, but he keeps adding more shows, coming back to Chicago again in June.
I saw that. But let's be honest. He ain't ever getting off the road.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what really happens. I mean, this is supposed to end. Now, in Boston, when I just saw him last weekend in Boston, I had been hearing stories that the tour was supposed to end in August of 2021. But then from the stage, Elton announced, he said, well, this tour won't end until November of 2021. So we'll see about that. But in 2020, I think the big expectation, too, will be Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band is coming back. I saw The Who at Madison Square Garden. I saw Rod Stewart at the Hollywood Bowl. So I'm trying to see, as many as I can. A cool show that I hope comes to Chicago, the Eagles.
Right. right. They're going to be performing at Hotel California.
In its entirety. So that does not have a Chicago date yet, but I hope it does because...
I'm sure it will.
Yeah, that's got to be a must-see. But I have to say, so Elvis Costello came to town last Friday at the Chicago Theater. So I said, wow, you know, great theater. Elvis, who actually had some health issues of his own a couple years ago. That were, I guess it was cancer scare. Apparently he's, you know, recovering and has recovered from that. So he put on a typical Elvis show, very eclectic, very loud, rocking, crooning, you name it. He played a lot of deep cuts. As I said, I referenced a song from his Armed Forces album called Green Shirt, and he did a lot of things from his Blood and Chocolate album and a few things from his Burt Bacharach album. Now, ironically, he didn't do a lot from his just-announced Grammy Award-nominated album called Look Out Now, because apparently he had some backup singers, and they caught the flu.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so they weren't there, and he kept apologizing, but he said, so this will give us a chance to do some songs we don't ordinarily do often. And he did do a lot of deep cuts. He did, like, High Fidelity from Get Happy, and just a really cool show. And he came out, he, you know, looked typical Elvis. He had the cool, you know, black horn-rimmed glasses, and he had a...
Pork pie hat.
Yeah, he had the pork pie hat, and he had a black sequined jacket with an orange tie to match his hat. And but he didn't do Angel's Gonna Wear My Red Shoes.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And apparently, I wasn't aware of this, but it sounds as if he's written the music for a stage musical based on the film A Face in the Crowd with Andy Griffith.
Ooh, now that's one of my favorite movies of all time. So that's something I'd want to hear for sure.
Yeah, and he did two songs from that. And he said, I know I've been talking about this, but it's coming, folks. It's really coming. And it's going to be coming to Chicago, too. And so, too, and that's, as I said, if you've never seen the film, A Face in the Crowd, Andy Griffith, like you never saw him before. This is before the Andy Griffith Show. What an amazing tour de force performance he gives as a as a radio DJ and then later a TV star who rises from nowhere and becomes this this major
political force,
kind of political force, and this megalomaniac. And Elia Kazan directed it. It's really one of the great films of the last 50 years. So I've never seen it before. Check out Face in the Crowd. But yeah, Elvis apparently has written a couple of the music for a stage version. So I have to say. It wasn't packed with a lot of the hits that you would expect, but you know, in retrospect, what hits does Elvis Costello have?
Well, that and you know, just certain songs that people would come to expect him to play. But the times I've seen him, I'll get a few of those, but not all of them.
And he had his longtime piano player Steve Naive, who just really accompanies and really gives a lot of the punch to so many of his songs. One of the highlights was watching The Detective. It was not only played well, but there was some great lighting going on, too. It was very...
Was the place sold out?
Oh, yeah. It was totally sold out.
Okay.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, a lot of Elvis fans.
It's funny you mention that, Jim, because one of my Facebook friends... Do you know Shelley Howard?
No.
Shelley Howard is... he's actually a very good friend of my old boss, Robert Murphy. They're like best of buddies. And I know Shelley through Facebook. Shelley is a longtime Chicagoan. He's been in a lot of different businesses, had his hands in a lot of things, but a lot of multimedia stuff. And one of the things he does, and still does, is he'll do page layouts for the reader. And he put up a picture on his Facebook page. Did Elvis have some kind of screens going? Video
yeah,
or something?
Screens behind him, yeah.
Okay. Apparently, Elvis posted up a shot of one of Shelley's first ads he ever did in 1977 for an Elvis Costello show at the Riviera Theater, and Shelley got a picture of this on the screen, and the opening act was Tom Petty.
No, he opened for...
He opened it for Tom Petty.
Yeah, he opened for Tom Petty.
At the Riviera Theater, Shelley Howard did the
that's cool.
promo posters for it, and Elvis put that up on the screen.
Yeah, I saw that. I got a picture of that, too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Hold on a second here, Mick. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN, 7:20 a.m. in Chicago. Lowrider.
The lowrider is a little higher.
I am the high rider. And that has nothing to do with our talk about marijuana earlier in the show.
That's right. Don't bogart that joint, mister.
Well, Mick, I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us and losing your 40 wings. But, hey, you're off today.
That's right. I get to sleep in, bud. It's my pleasure.
But I do want to ask you one quick time, because I thought it would be just good to wrap this segment up. With the big movies of the year, that many that you will see nominated for Oscars are starting to come out now. So we were talking about three or four or five that are either currently out or will be coming out. Now, I was mentioning, you said that you liked The Good Liar.
Yeah, very much.
And I said I liked The Irishman. We're talking about a new one that's coming out this Wednesday that I haven't seen, but certainly I think looks like it may be worth it. It's a very cool Agatha Christie whodunit takeoff called Knives Out.
I saw the preview a couple times. It looks very interesting.
Yeah, with Jamie Lee Curtis. And why do I keep blanking on 007?
Daniel Craig,
right. And then we cannot forget, now you mentioned one that you wanted to see. What was the Fox Movies film called?
Bombshell.
And
yeah, that comes out like middle of December. But like I said, I'm going to hold off. I usually see movies when they first come out, you know, because I'm really interested right off the bat. But I'm saving that one as my Christmas Day movie.
And now Bombshell, what is that about?
It's about Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson and all the shenanigans that was going on at Fox with Roger Ailes, the president of Fox News.
And, you know, Russell Crowe just did a miniseries on Showtime playing Roger Ailes as well. So
And I saw that, but I'll tell you, in the preview, John Lithgow plays Roger Ailes, and he looks better and sounds better as Ailes than Russell Crowe did.
Oh, wow. Well, I mean, John Lithgow's one of the great actors, so that...
Yeah.
So that's called Bombshell, and that's coming out when?
I think like the 13th of December, something like that. And that's also the same day. Have you seen the previews for this movie, Richard Jewell?
Oh, right. Richard Jewell was the guy that was accused back in the Atlanta Olympics of planting a bomb at the Olympics, and he was accused of doing it, and yet had nothing to do with it.
Right. John Hamm plays one of the investigators. Clint Eastwood directed it. That's coming out the 13th, too. That looks really good.
And, of course, we cannot forget on December 20th, Rise of Skywalker.
Yep, last Star Wars.
The final Star Wars, at least in terms of the Skywalker saga and that entire...
Right, the nine-part series, yeah.
That whole story. So that was written and directed by J.J. Abrams, who did... the first one of this final trilogy, the Force Awakens. A lot of questions, a lot of anticipation, a lot of skepticism. No one knows what to expect from this. Disney has done a pretty good job of keeping a lot of the major plot lines under wraps. We do know that Mark Hamill's in it. I think we do know that some old footage of Carrie Fisher will be used as Princess Leia. But a lot of questions were certainly raised at the end of The Last Jedi that need to be answered. And so, I don't know. I think right now there's a disturbance in the Force.
I would say so.
Yeah, there's a lot of people wondering what's going on. So we will all find that out, I'm sure, on December 20th. So we've got Rise of Skywalker. We've got The Good Liar. We've got The Irishman. We've got Knives Out. And we've got... The Bombshell. So I think those are pretty good to take us now through the end of the year. So thank you so much for taking time, Mick. It's always fun to talk pop culture with you. And once again, I really appreciate you staying up and adding only what you can do. And if you want to enjoy some of Mick's other talents, as I said, he writes some parody songs that appear regularly on the WGN Morning News.
My pleasure, pal. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. Mick Kaler joining us here at WGN for the last hour or so. Actually, geez, almost 2 hours. Thanks a lot, Mick. Mick and I go way back. We actually did college radio together at good old Elmhurst College, 88.7 FM. So let me see. Why don't I read the temps? Boy, there's a lot of weather here.
There's always a ton of weather. Man. It's happening all the time.
Wow. Should I, yeah, thanks, Tom. Thanks, guys. Jeez. Should I do it like Tom? Oh, jeez. Oh. Thanks, guys. I love when Tom Skilling, at the end of his newscast, and I love Tom, and Tom used to be on with us in the afternoon every day, and I have a great affection for Tom, and We became friends, and I haven't seen him in a while, but I always watch him. But I love when he's right at the end, he's like, thanks, Micah. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, guys. Yeah.
He's just happy to be there.
Oh, he is the happiest man on earth. He really, I mean, that is, Tom Skilling is really just a perfect example of a passionate person who is doing exactly what he should be and wants to do. And my gosh, that is probably the definition of a life well lived. If you're able to do for a living what you would love to be doing for nothing, boy, congratulations, Tom. Thanks, guys. So I will not do my Tom, but I love you, Tom, and happy Thanksgiving if you're listening. Because he's probably up right now getting ready, or he's just getting done. I mean, that guy's almost on a 24-hour schedule.
But, you think he has, like, pictures of clouds in his cubicle or in his office?
He's got, I know he's got pictures of, wow, this is a beautiful winter snow with a butterfly that was sent in by Tom Hush from Rogers Park, Micah. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think Tom is always partly sunny. I don't think he has any clouds anywhere around him.
In this cruel and cynical world.
Yes, in this cruel and cynical world, Tom is a shining sunspot. Here's the forecast from the WGN Weather Center. Thanks, guys. Jeez. After the break, we'll take a quick break here, and after the break, I want to talk about, are you like me? I hope not. It's no fun in here, folks. Believe me. No. Have you been able to watch a Blackhawks game or a Bulls game? Are you worried that you won't be able to watch a White Sox game come spring or a Cubs game? Because right now, if you're like me and you are a Dish network owner, you are blacked out of NBC Sports Channel, NBC Chicago. So I'd like to talk about that because here the Blackhawks are on this amazing run. I'm a huge Blackhawk fan. I'm out in the cold during hockey season. So we'll talk about that after this. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN 720. Hopefully, you have been with us since 1 a.m. I mean, what else are you doing? I was here and going to be here till 5 a.m., so why not you? Come on. Third shifters, insomniacs, the baby's crying, whatever it is, whatever reason you are up, thank you for staying up with us, or maybe you're just waking up. I think there's actually two kinds of listeners. That's why I like the overnight shift, because it's an interesting, first of all, I think if you are listening during the early morning hours, especially during this show from 1 to 5, you're listening because you want to, right? There's a reason. Because if you were like most normal people, you'd be sleeping right now. But you're not, for whatever reason. So for whatever that reason is, and you're compelled to put on your radio, once again, thank you so much for staying up, and hopefully you'll hang around for another 40 minutes or so. And as I said, after that, we'll pass things off to Paul Lisnick, who will be handling the opening bell this morning. And yes, it is the end of the year here, Thanksgiving time. It's a time for lots of sports. We had the Bears today eking out a victory against a very, very poor New York Giants team. My gosh, the Giants coach right now has to be pulling his hair out, because of course the Bears won barely 19-14, but don't forget that the Giants missed two field goals, so it's 20-19, and the Giants pull an upset at Soldier Fields, really. So, hey, but hey, that's, you know, that's the way the game goes. But, yeah, I don't know if Bear fans should be intrigued or enthused or just say, meh. Yeah, they'll probably beat the Lions on Thanksgiving. But sad part, folks, is Bears. I know Bear, once, if the Bears are 6-6, they're going to have this false hope of, oh, my gosh, we might be looking at the playoffs. Don't forget, Cowboys, Chiefs, Packers and Vikings. Are they going to win one of those games? I don't even know if they're going to win one of them. So they're suddenly going to go from 6-6 to maybe 7-9 and maybe even 6-10. I'm not trying to be a pessimist. I'm just being a realist. So enjoy the next couple of weeks, I guess, is all I'm saying. But what I'm saying too about, if you're a sports fan, if you're like me, it's hard to enjoy some of our winter sports here. because I have had Dish Network, and I've been very happy with Dish Network. I've had Dish Network, I believe, since like 1995 when they first started. So I have been a Dish customer for a long time, and I've been very happy with the service. And I've moved, well, two times since I first got it. The moving was very easy. They came, they reinstalled it. I've had no complaints. But I think that we talked earlier about the changing landscape of television viewing, especially with the injection of TV streaming the last couple of years. A lot of competition. There's a lot of companies jockeying for position to do battle against Netflix. There's a lot of companies that are realizing that people are watching a little more TV because the content on TV now is elevating. And, you know, as we've always seen many times, a lot of stations will get into what they call, and I'm not going to get too technical here, but the cost it costs the provider that they have to pay, the content provider, to put on the network. And many times, I know on Dish Network, for instance, about a couple of years ago, all Fox programming was gone for about a month or so. And then it finally came back. They negotiated and resolved it, and the programming came back on. Now, interestingly, last year at this time, on Dish Network, HBO took their programming off. I figured, well, look, okay, there's some dispute, and so they went to these degrees. But I also knew that in April of 2019, this year, the new season of Game of Thrones would be on, and there's no way that HBO or Dish would allow their viewers not to have the Game of Thrones on HBO. Well, November went by, December went by, January went by, February went by, March went by, no HBO. Finally, on the program guide, it said, if you want to watch, this is, Dish knew it was happening. Dish actually wrote in the program guide, in the HBO little grid, if you want to watch Game of Thrones, subscribe to HBO now. They literally were telling you to subscribe to the streaming service of HBO because clearly they were not going to have it, and we still have not got HBO. Now, they haven't charged us for it. But my point is, I can't watch HBO on my Dish Network, and I did have to subscribe to HBO now in order to watch Game of Thrones. Well, now, since I think when the baseball season ended and the NBC Sports channel shifted because the Cubs bailed out to form their own new network coming in February or so, the Marquee Network. So now you've got on the NBC Sports Channel, Sports Chicago, you've got the Blackhawks, the Bulls, and in the spring, the White Sox. Well, suddenly I go to my dial on the Dish Network, no NBC Sports Chicago. There's a thing on the grid. You know, we are here to fight for your rights. And the regional sports business model has been broken for years, and we will not succumb and pass this. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not paying you to be some kind of warrior for the business. I want my Blackhawks. You know, I'm not a huge Bulls fan, but I like baseball. I'm certainly I'm missing the Blackhawks, and right now they're in this resurgence. The Patrick Kane has a 13 game point thing. They've won five or six games in a row. They're certainly on the upswing, and I have not seen one Blackhawk game this year. Are you in the same boat I am? I mean, I understand that it might, you know, but look, everybody's bill goes up. I get a content provider. I certainly don't want to pay thousands of dollars, but I also want the programming. That's why I have the Dish. And I appreciate what Dish Network may be doing from a standpoint of the industry, and maybe in the long run they will be helping to lower costs. So I get that, but there's also the other side of me that's just a TV viewer that wants these shows. You've already made me subscribe to HBO Now separately, And now you're shutting me out on my one of my favorite sports and one of my favorite teams of all time, the Blackhawks. And now the White Sox have just made a couple of big moves, so there's a lot of anticipation for the new White Sox season. And I don't know if it's going to be back by April. And who's to know if they're going to do a deal with the Cubs marquee? I might never be able to watch another baseball game in my life. So Dish and these kind of companies here, remember why we are watching you or why we're subscribing. We want our programming. I don't want to pay $1 million. I appreciate you being a crusader, but I also need you to also find some middle ground here for all sports fans, especially here in Chicago, especially Blackhawk fans, who want to watch their Hawks. Come on, Dish. Jeez. I'm off my soapbox. I'm off to a break. Jim Toronto, Nick filling in for Nick DiGilio. No switching. Jim Toronto with you this morning. Elton Jim filling in for Nick DiGilio. Hey, if you like what you've heard for the last, 3.5 hours, then maybe you'll enjoy listening to it as well on Friday morning from 1 to 5. I will be ushering in, officially, Black Friday. So if you're... you're having your Thanksgiving dinner and you're coming back from your celebrations and you're coming back about 10 or 11 o'clock and you ease in to home and you sit in your easy chair and you unbuckle your pants and you put on your sweats. I'll be here from 1 to 5 a.m. On Friday morning, just after Thanksgiving, day or so. It's kind of that weird little time thing, but it's officially Friday morning, but it really feels like Thanksgiving. So, you know, a lot of times you eat early, so maybe you'll catch that second wind. I hopefully will be catching that second wind because I will be expected to be here at 1 a.m. to 5, so I hope you will join me on that day again, this Friday, November 29th, the day after Thanksgiving, right early in the morning, 1 a.m. So in fact, I'm just thinking about it. A lot of you shoppers for Black Friday, you go out and wait in long lines, don't you? Oh, I could be your Black Friday companion when you're waiting outside of Best Buy or some of these places where they have all those crazy Black Friday sales. Bring your AM radio with you. I will be your entertainment while you sit in the cold. Waiting for those deals. Perfect. So I'll meet you here at 1 a.m., right? Friday morning. Sounds good. So, you know, I just wanted to finish this this little topic we were talking about because, as I said, I've got Dish Network, and I've had it for more than 25, almost 30 years. And it's just been a little aggravating this year, especially in the last year. As I said, I've had to... go to a streaming service to get HBO to watch the last season of Game of Thrones and watch one of my other favorite shows this year was the show Succession. And so I watch Silicon Valley, which is in its final season. So there's a lot of HBO shows that I watch. And unfortunately, Dish Network has stopped carrying HBO, which, you know, initially when I bought Dish, that was one of the selling points. I get HBO. And now, unfortunately, they are in a distribution or carrier fee dispute with NBC Sports Chicago, which carries the Blackhawks and the Bulls and the White Sox. And the White Sox aren't affected yet. But right now, certainly, the Blackhawks are. And here they are, as I said, having this early season renaissance. Things looked, just 2 weeks ago, the Blackhawks looked like, wow, it's going to be a tough season. And suddenly a new spark has emerged, and they're playing great. Patrick Kane is on a roll. And I have yet to see a Blackhawk game. You know, the Blackhawks are no longer on WGN television. Most of the games are just on NBC Sports Chicago. Now, there will be some network games on NBC. So I could watch a game, but I'm just saying on a day-to-day regular schedule basis, I'm missing out on on some really great hockey that's being played now. And as I said, I appreciate Dish Network sticking up for me because I do know that a lot of people, especially depending on the kind of you know, packages that you do subscribe to, that when you bundle your internet in and you get a lot of the movie channels and a lot of premium, like especially a lot of the sports packages, I mean, yeah, you know, your monthly cable bill or your monthly satellite bill can easily top $200, if not $250. So I understand that there is a breaking point on this. So I certainly appreciate when a corporation that, that I am doing business with is looking out for my best interests. So I'm not completely adverse to Dish Network taking a stand against the apparently the rise in carrier fees to carry NBC Sports Chicago. But at the same time, it's almost December, and this has been going on since about September, and we're in the full now throes of these two winter sports, hockey and basketball, and I get Dish Network ultimately for the content. That's why I have it. I don't want to pay a ton of money. I appreciate that. But I also didn't subscribe to you to make an example out of some company or to be some crusader for the industry. I appreciate your company's interests, but there is also something about the customer's interests, because there is going to come a point here where I, or either myself or other people, are going to say, yeah, you know what? Blackhawks, Bulls, and White Sox programming is important enough for me to look for other options. And I don't know how many people have done that yet, because maybe they're like me, wondering or hoping or expecting that ultimately this negotiation will end and the programming will come back. But now, if history repeats itself, as it did with HBO leaving and apparently never coming back, I don't know if NBC Sports Chicago will come back to Dish Network. And I don't know if the marquee network for the Cubs will ever come, because what will their demands be? So at the end of the day, I just think it's important for these content carriers, especially in a day with the streaming services who are certainly mounting quite an attack on our dollar and our interest and providing compelling content. Sometimes somebody has to bite the bullet here, and it shouldn't be the customer. So just keep that in mind, folks. And I don't know, are you ready to cut the cord? I don't know if I'm ready to cut the cord, but it's getting close. I want my Blackhawks. That's all I'm saying. I want my Blackhawks. And I miss my Blackhawks. So hopefully sometime soon I will turn on my program, my program guide, and I will see Blackhawks versus Capitals. And I'll be able to hit enter, and there will be the game. So hopefully we will see that. But it's been very frustrating this year. And my gosh, like I said, the White Sox making some big signings. So yeah, the baseball season, I know, you know what, it's November and it feels like it's a long way away. But watch how fast February comes in terms of spring training. And now the baseball season starts in March. So it's not that far anymore. So I saw this interesting story here. What do we make of Elon Musk? I don't know what to make of this guy. I know he made his billions. What did he? He came up with
PayPal.
PayPal, exactly, which is a great, great service. But you know, he is so flush with money, and at the same time, he's very flush with ambitions and visions, as many tech guys are, and that is certainly an admirable, attribute to have. But at the same time, a lot of these visions and a lot of these ambitions, while they sound exciting, they never come to fruition. And you know, I mean, we're still waiting to see if we're going to get the, you know, we keep talking about all these, you know, flights to space and flights to the moon. And okay, I know that was a very successful launch. Okay, still waiting for that. You remember about a year or so ago during the Rahm Emanuel administration, Elon Musk. I don't know where this sits now with Mayor Lightfoot. In fact, I think during the election, she was against this, but Elon Musk was certainly tight with Rahm Emanuel, and had signed. I believe there was. I don't know if the contract was signed, but there certainly was some kind of relationship that was put together where Elon Musk was supposed to. His company was supposed to build a tunnel with a high-speed rail to go from downtown Chicago to O'Hare. And it was purely speculative. It was never done yet. It was still kind of a new infant technology. They did some kind of a test, I believe, somewhere in California where some alderman went on a not the full length, but what would be at least the pod that you would be in and the type of track. And they came back a little skeptical. I remember the main feedback was the ride was a little bumpy. So that was what they came back with. So I don't know where that project stands. The space thing is another thing. Everybody, of course, electric cars, the Teslas are one of the most in-demand cars. And so now here's a story that Elon Musk says that Tesla has already received 200,000 orders for their Cybertruck. So now this is a passenger pickup truck that was unveiled Thursday night. Everybody's excited, viral reactions, headlines. It's supposed to start production in 2021. They're all excited. There was actually no advertising, nothing. Everybody already 200,000 orders. I used to work somewhat in the technology world. In fact, I did public relations for a lot of tech firms, and I've sat in rooms with some of the big tech people of the last 20 years or so. So I know how they think. I know how excited they get. And they are visionaries, but a lot of times, they bite off more than they can chew. And what I'm a little worried about is at this time in where we're at, we need like tangible things. There's nothing wrong with always looking ahead and dreaming and looking to the future. I mean, that's what makes this country and that's what makes the human race a great thing. We're always looking forward and testing our boundaries. I understand that. But at the same time, we've got a lot of problems that are right in front of us. And I don't know if we're paying attention to those and we're getting all excited by, whatever the new shiny ring, the new shiny object gets all our attentions. And meanwhile, we're still wondering about school strikes and nurses strikes and the quality of schools. And so you read something like this and it's like, okay, here's 200,000 orders for the Cybertruck. It's going to be a heavy duty stainless steel. It's electric, so it'll go up to 500 miles on a single charge, and the price goes anywhere from $39,000 to $79,000, almost $77,000. Who is? Oh, is he? Oh, very cool. So I don't know. I mean, maybe we should concentrate on what we're doing and what we need, as opposed to these out of the way projects. I don't know, but here's somebody that I guess has something to say to me. What are you doing up now, Dean Richards?
I'm always up at now. What do you mean?
What time does a Dean Richards get up?
I get up at 3:00.
Wow. So what is it? What do you do from 3 until you go to work?
I prepare my segments for the WGN Morning News.
You have to prepare for that?
I know it doesn't seem like it.
I thought that was all ad-libbed. I thought that was off the cuff.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of work that goes into being off the cuff.
So how you doing, Dean?
I turned the radio on, and there's Elton Jim.
Yeah, how about that?
And, while I was driving and coming into work, I'm worried about, Friday morning, I like to hang outside all the retail stores.
Right.
To get those Black Friday bargains.
Yeah, I know you.
And I'm just wondering how I'm going to be able to negotiate handling the mass of people who are going to be out there. And I'm just happy to know that you'll be there steering the ship.
Well, that's what I said. I could be, as everybody is out there in the wee hours, bundled right. up and waiting outside their favorite appliance store, their favorite department store.
Yeah, that's me. I'm trying to get a discount hot pot.
Oh, everybody. Oh, that's the new thing now. Everybody with the hot pot.
What? Are you anti-hot pot?
Well, I'm not anti-hot pot, but all of a sudden in the last 3 weeks, if I had a dollar for every time I heard the term hot pot.
I know.
Oh, my gosh.
It's been longer than 3 weeks. You've only been paying attention that long.
Yeah, that's all. But I'm just saying, even in the last 3 weeks, my gosh, I'd have $1 million. So what is it?
The new cooking appliance.
So what is a Dean Richards going to eat from his hot pot?
I'm not really getting a hot pot.
No, I didn't think so. I don't see Dean as a hot pot guy.
It turns out that I have a stove and pots and pans already.
Right, exactly.
So I can.
Isn't it just a crock pot on steroids? Really? Right.
It is. That's exactly correct. Yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah. It's a crock pot / pressure cooker for the most part. So
the only difference is it doesn't have that bad floral pattern that it used to have.
Hey, speak for yourself about that floral pattern. Avocado gold with harvest gold flowers on them. That's the decor of my kitchen.
Well, hey, that's back in now. You see, Dean, you waited 40 years, and now you're back in.
Same with my clothes.
You're hip. You knew those earth shoes would come back one day.
I never stopped wearing them. Hey, they're very comfortable.
What is on the entertainment news this morning on those wires? Are you going to be buzzing about Taylor Swift being the artist of the decade?
Of course. She was the big winner, record breaker at the American Music Awards last night. So, yes, we're going to be talking about her and playing some highlights of her performance last night.
Were you upset?
Did you watch the performance?
I saw a little of it. Now, what I was surprised about... Did you prepare yourself
since you were, going to be doing a show last night?
I did watch it, but it's ironic. I was on for 4 hours and I didn't mention the American Music Awards one time.
Wow!
Yeah, isn't that just think, Dean?
What did you talk about?
It is possible. It is possible. No. Oh my goodness! I had 5 pounds of bologna jammed into a 1 pound bag tonight. I mean, it was unbelievable. But no.
He means that literally, ladies and gentlemen.
No, I was shocked. I saw the very end.
He actually brings in
4 pounds.
For every show that he does, he actually brings in 5 pounds of bologna.
And I also have one of those cutters that you put it on, at the deli, the slicer.
Oh, those are the sweetest. I wish I had
I
one
know,
of those.
Don't you? I mean, there was a Seinfeld episode where Kramer had a slicer, and it sounded crazy, but my gosh, would I love one of those for Christmas. Heck with a hot pot. Yeah. I want a slicer.
Do you know what a mandolin is? Are you familiar with what a mandolin is?
You mean the instrument?
No, it's, well, there is such an instrument, but there's also a kitchen device called a mandolin.
No.
On which you slice stuff. It's usually like a plastic, kind of a board, but it's got a blade in it.
Oh, yeah, no, I know what you're talking. It's called the mandolin?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, you slide vegetables or things on it so you can slice them evenly and so you can change the blades and make them decorative.
Didn't Ron Popeil have that?
Probably. Ron Popeil had most everything, but the reason I bring it up is that the closest that I ever had to one of those great deli slicers that I would like to have, I went and bought one many, many years ago, and I'm slicing up a storm like crazy. I forget what I was cooking, but I wound up in the emergency room.
Oh, you sliced up your pinky.
I sliced off a little piece of my index finger.
Well, you know what? If you marinate that, it's very good.
I hope so, because the pain and suffering, it was messy.
So is Dean Richards right now at the at Ground Zero? Are you at the WGN studios?
I'm in the parking lot right now, ready to... ready to go inside.
That's nice.
I just thought I would check in.
Well, thank you so much, Dean. I appreciate you checking in. And, you know, once again, as I said...
Not that I didn't enjoy your half-hour conversation about Elon Musk, but I thought I would call in and check in.
Well, I don't... I mean, this guy, I don't know. I keep hearing about Elon Musk, and I'm not seeing him doing anything. All I keep hearing is he's tweeting, he's getting in trouble, but he's not making anything.
Hey, you know what? If I had Elon Musk's money, I wouldn't do a damn thing either.
I guess. I don't think he sits in the outside in a parking lot at 4:45 in the morning in the dark.
Hey, this is going to be exciting right now because I'm going in. I'm not going in the front door of WGN. We have a back secret door that I'm going in today. But when I go in, I scan my employee ID. It sets off this alarm that I don't think it has ever been heard before.
That's nice. All right,
see if you can hear it. Can you hear it?
Oh, nice. You're going to be taken by security now.
Can you hear the beeping?
Yes. I think security's coming to get you.
That's the first thing that... No, they know it's me.
Oh, okay.
That's the first thing that I'm greeted with every day.
Oh, that's nice. That'll wake you up.
Yeah. Walking through the bowels of WGN TV, the back corridors... Right now,
be careful for polyps.
Jim Toronto, king of the colonoscopy humor.
Hey, you don't hear good colonoscopy humor anymore, Dean.
No, you really don't. There's not a lot of shows where you get the half an hour conversation about Elon Musk and colonoscopy humor.
That's what makes this show so exciting, and I appreciate you calling in.
I think too.
But just as you always try to do, you're trying to get me off schedule, but I can't do that, so I will say goodbye to you. Thank you for calling, and call in on Friday morning.
I just have a few more things that I'd like to add.
Jim Toronto, Elton Jim, filling in for Nick DiGilio. We will be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto, filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Just before we say goodbye, I did want to ask this quick question of you. Is it too early for Christmas decorations? And I ask this because I already put mine up on Wednesday, November 20th.
You're a madman.
The tree not completely decorated, but all the other things in the house, the living room, the dining room, the kitchen, the little side room, even some upstairs in one of the bedrooms, filled with Santas and snowmen. Everywhere you look, our house is a red and white wonderland. Now, here's the cool part, though. To the outside world, no one knows what's inside because I have nothing on the outside that would let you know that I have already put my Christmas decorations up. On my door is a wreath made of fake leaves. So it still appears as if I am much into the autumn and Thanksgiving spirit. Meanwhile, when you walk into the house, it's a veritable winter wonderland. Now, I will say this. On Wednesday, at about 3 in the afternoon, I will change my outdoor lights, which are currently white, to red and green. And then I will not turn those lights on until about 7 o'clock at night, because I believe that by 7 o'clock at night, Thanksgiving is pretty much over, and the Christmas season then can officially end, and to the outside world, I will have not looked like I jumped the gun or forgot about Thanksgiving or made Thanksgiving feel like a speed bump holiday. To the outside world right now, if you drive past my house, you'll say, oh, what a nice autumnal wreath on that house. Little do you know that inside, it's Santa galore. So there's a little hidden surprise. But yes, is it too early? I had some people, I had a few guests come over, some friends come over the other day, and they walked in and went, whoa, where did all this come from? But you know what? I was just in the mood. I love to decorate for Christmas. And I was just like, you know what? And don't forget, this week, you know, by the time Thanksgiving comes, it's the 28th of November. That's late this year. So you only have like a month or so. So I'm going to get like a good 2 months. At least, almost, or 6 or 7 weeks of Christmas decoration. So I'm digging that. But I don't know if it's too early or not. As I said, I don't want to be accused of bypassing and not giving respect to Thanksgiving. So as far as the outside world is concerned, I'm still autumnal. I'm still Thanksgiving. But inside, I've got the carols playing, and everywhere I look, there is a Santa Claus. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto with you. Elton Jim filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Been here since 1 a.m., and I'm just about out of here at 5 a.m. Hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks to producer Tom Hush for making things run so smoothly, and hopefully we'll work again soon. So if you like what you heard, I'll be back here Friday morning from 1 to 5 on Black Friday. Early, you know, sort of Thanksgiving, sort of not, you know what I mean? Sort of Thursday night, but it is officially Friday morning from 1 to 5. So listen to Elton Jim and filling in for Nick DiGilio. What else do I want to say? Thanks to Michaela for joining us today. And also thanks to Dean Richards for his surprise call. And I should say, Dean, I just did get a call from the Museum of Broadcasting, and they actually want Tom to send them a clip of my Elon Musk discussion for their archives. So just so you know. You may have found it, you know, less than scintillating, but radio people got it, okay? Okay, Dean? Just so you know. Anyway, I want to thank you all for staying up with me and keeping me awake, and I hope I was able to keep you awake, and we'll do this again on Friday morning.